Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Eric, I am almost 300 miles from Target Center, but when CM Punk made a surprise entrance at the end of the show to have a stare down with Jon Moxley, I might have felt the earth shake under my feet a little bit. Was that an earthquake, Eric? Did I feel a quake by the lake?
Are you by a lake right now, Lake Superior?
I am by Lake Superior.
Well, that is the quake by the lake. Then
you felt it, sir. They named it after what I would experience next to what we in Minnesota call the lake, which is, you know, a couple hundred miles from Minneapolis. But I am close by, about 14 miles from it right now. And, so they named the show after me. It all makes sense now. I appreciate it.
It all comes back to Wade always. Don't you have 9,999 other lakes in the land of 10,000 lakes?
Yes, but we don't refer to any of them as the lake other than Lake Superior, because that's right. Really like a sea more than a lake. I'll joking about the silly name for the show aside, which they didn't lean on too hard, so maybe they're self-aware by now. CM Punk's back. He hopped around the ring on one leg. He is not medically cleared officially, according to the announcers, but he looks healthy and had a stare down with Moxley. I think it's official if we doubted or had any doubt before. Barring another injury or unforeseen circumstances, we have our all-out main event, Eric.
Yeah, they sure seem all in for all out. If they thought otherwise, they would have saved Moxley Jericho for to main event that pay-per-view, but they went with it tonight. What a match it was. I thought, for me, heading into tonight, best-case scenario was they've only got three more Dynamites to set up the all-out card after tonight. And so I thought, well,
wow.
In a perfect world, you know, Moxley wins, submits Jericho. You bring out CM Punk for a face-to-face. Now, in between that, they had an NWO-era-style Nitro ending with 15 guys in the ring brawling. But they got there in the end, and the jolt everybody felt was AEW, who kind of had a muddle through the summer due to all these injuries, suddenly getting a jolt of life again, it seemingly, after being, you know, I've heard people call it cold, you know. I don't know how much of that's relative to just all the WWE news that's been going on lately, but certainly business is picking up, to quote good old JR.
Yeah, but they lost Chris Statlander, so it's really, you know, an even trade, or...
Yeah, she's injured again.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why Sonny Kiss is trending on Twitter right now, other than Sonny Kiss might be wrestling at this moment. But it's a weird thing to be trending, of all things that happened on Dynamite.
She, if I'm using the pronoun correctly, I think I am, is on Rampage, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. But why would that be trending on? Of all the things that were announced or happened tonight, I'm looking at Twitter, and Sonny Kiss is trending, but not CM Punk. That's my point. I mean,
yeah.
I know we sort of have custom trends now, the way, you know, I don't like that. I know I can turn it off, but they sort of customize them. But
yeah,
anyway,
you know, you only need about 1,500 tweets to trend these days at certain times of the night.
But still, CM Punk should be trending. But I don't want to belabor that point. Not the headline coming out of this. You mentioned that Jericho Moxley match was a banger. We had Eric. Do you have earrings? Have you had earrings?
I have not. My wife and sister and mother all have.
I had my ears pierced and wore earrings in my 20s. And I wouldn't want somebody to yank a ring out. I don't know if Jericho did or not, honestly. But, I mean, Moxley was bleeding heavily from that ear. So maybe he bladed his earlobe, but had Jericho, you know, yank out an earring that wasn't fastened. Whatever it was, visually, it was bloody. And by the end of the match, it's just that whole ear is just covered in blood. That wasn't even the top story from the match. It was just a really cool match with Lionheart, Jericho coming out and putting on one of the, I mean, what that was the best singles match he's had in how long, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, since his run as AEW champion, probably, right? Maybe against Moxley at Revolution 2020 in Chicago, right before the world shut down.
Yeah. I mean, this was like, I mean, doing, you know, the 50-somethings proud with that. I mean, he looked great, like in the face, shaped beard, just physically, it looked like he took this seriously. He's in better shape than he was 6 months ago, obviously. He's talked about why and how. But that was a hell of a match. It plays into one narrative that I had going into this week with AEW, which is, you know, this is Jon Moxley's company right now. And if I'm AEW, I do more than have Moxley cut a great, I don't want to use the word great, a really good solo promo early in the show to hype the match coming up later, and then have him have a really good match and bleed a lot. I do more with him. I, you know, I'm not going to sit here and like get into the details of it, but I talk about him more, feature him more, make it a bigger thing. But now you have this good problem, and it's a problem AEW hasn't had as often as they have at other times because of these injuries and hiatuses. But you have the problem now with CM Punk being back. And this is a good, I think, based on what we saw tonight, kind of a good pick'em face versus face match. You got Moxley with the attitude. Punk obviously has an edge to him, but plays to the fans more. And, you know, both are enormously popular. I think it's just going to be one of those matches where fans are just dueling, chanting, and just want to see a fight. And, you know, a third of them will have one guy they want to see win. Another third will want to see a different guy win. And then there'll be another third who are like, I just want to be here for this and or watch it on pay-per-view because this is an iconic, cool match. And I think they're onto something, Eric, with this. It saved a show that I think had some issues otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, I really enjoyed the first 40 minutes maybe tonight. Yep. And then I went to sleep. If you went to sleep for about the next 40, 45 minutes till about 8:30 Central, you didn't really miss much. And then business picked up again at the end. So if we're judging by tonight's crowd reaction, I know Punk was making his return, so he's going to get the loud cheers and the babyface pops. But certainly seemed like I agree with you that when I am sitting there at all out on Labor Day weekend, that there will be dueling chants. They will both be faces, unless Moxley plays subtle heel to push the crowd in one direction a little bit. But you know, Moxley did, you know, the crowd did not necessarily like Moxley when he left the ring and kind of didn't really acknowledge Punk. So we'll see how it plays out over the next 3 weeks. I sure hope Punk is ready to come back.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know, you know, doing a 3 week build or a 2 week build. I don't know who they would swap in there.
I don't think they would do this unless they're confident in his current physical state. Punk is ready to go. And if you're Punk, you want to train carefully. You know, he's in his 40s. He doesn't have a lot of ring time in recent years and obviously in recent weeks. So, you know, train smart. But don't overtrain and just make sure you're able to be there. A lot is riding on that pay-per-view buy rate based on a Moxley versus Punk. Cause you know, I don't know what you plug in instead, unless you got a fresh Kenny Omega or something as the backup plan waiting in the wings. Tons of blood, tons of drama, a clean tap out win for Mox. Taz jumping in going no shame in tapping. It was a really, really nice, main event for AEW, and it's the type of thing that makes you forget about anything earlier in the show. Like you said, Eric, that might have seemed like a lull in star power or relevant or feuds that people are invested in, which we'll get into as we go on here. But just a good statement win for Moxley. And is it too much blood? Like is AEW, because they're going to do blood and WWE isn't, and that's kind of part of their identity, or at least they're not going to, you know, it's a 20-to-1 margin difference. Are they doing too much of it? Like, is that by the end of the show, was it just, especially with Jericho and Moxley, I don't know if Jericho hitting the turnbuckle was a blade or hard way or whatever, but does it seem excessive? Do you think it actually might turn some people off, or if so, it's not significant?
I wrote down in my notes, probably too much blood to grow the audience, but they're certainly super serving the audience they have.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we can talk more about that and other things on tonight's post-show, but let's pause and introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post-Show for Wednesday, August 10th, 2022, and I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of the Wade Keller podcast and post shows, and a variety of VIP exclusive podcasts. So go VIP to hear those. And the other voice you hear is Eric Kroll, who is a former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist going back 3 decades, and took some time off to raise his family. And then his interest was sparked again by New Japan and now AEW. And he is now contributing on post shows, some other podcasts, and occasional articles also, with another one coming up this week. Eric, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Eric Kroll, you going into this main event match. Oh, never mind. I got to do more business. Forgot I said that. I don't want to move on to the next topic. I want to give out the phone numbers. There is no line. So we have tons of people who called in. No one's pushed one right now to join us. So if you want to join the conversation, do that, because it's an oddly short wait. Our number, if you haven't called in yet and want to join the conversation, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on our switchboard. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. They were in Minneapolis tonight. I joked about the whole Quake at the Lake title, which I've been ranting about only slightly tongue-in-cheek since they announced it weeks ago. Eric, did this feel like a theme-worthy episode of Dynamite by the time it was done?
I guess I viewed it as a loaded show going in because of the coffin match and finally getting Penta and Fénix versus Andrade and Rush. And the main event, obviously, a world title match featuring two of AEW's biggest stars was always going to be a draw. And I guess in the end, and on balance, it comes across, and Punk's return makes it come across as a loaded show, the hint of maybe Kenny Omega coming back is next week, next Wednesday, as a matter of fact, is sort of the broad hints that were dropped. I guess it felt like a mega show. It just, usually when you have, like an Arthur Ashe stadium level card, Dynamite card, there's not a space, a 45-minute chunk in the middle where, you know, you would not blame viewers if they turn the channel for a little bit.
Yeah, I think the downside of the show is it did feel like I accidentally turned on YouTube and started watching AW Dark for, you know, a good chunk of the show. And if I wasn't watching Dark, it felt like I needed to pause Dynamite and watch the last, you know, 3-4 weeks of Dark, or maybe the last couple months, to catch up on some of the storylines. They tried to catch us up, to their credit. They did a video package on Starks and Aaron Solo and their history together, which was a nice touch, but it felt sort of like cramming right before a test. I don't think by the end people care. I mean, you had some background, which is better than nothing, but I'm not sure people were emotionally invested in that. And then you had QT Marshall, you had the Gun Club, you had Madison Rayne showing up, who for a sizable part of Dynamite's audience is a big name for them to bring in and immediately give a title shot to. But it's not a big enough percentage, Eric, to not actually introduce her to the rest of the fans and explain why she's getting a title match in her either first or second AEW match, depending on if you believe the on-site, on-screen graphic or the announcers, and, like, give some context to the match. And they didn't do that. And that's one of the, I think, quirks of Tony Khan's booking sometimes, is if he's heard of them and they've been around for years and there's hardcore fans on the internet or social media who know who they are, boom, drop them in and just assume knowledge. But, you know, she's never been a top-level national star. So yeah, there was some sloppiness and kind of, you know, lower mid card at best stuff that filled a good part of the show. Why do you disagree with any of my characterization of what I picked out as that? And why do you think Tony Khan took that approach and strategy with the show?
Well, it's weird, 'cause they did in the Wade-o meter of, are they having enough video packages, even short video packages? They did well, I thought, in making the main event feel important. They had Moxley promo, they had Jericho promo, they had the Jericho Appreciation Society talking it up. So that was all good. They did a video package before the Ricky Starks Aaron Solo match to remind us of why they're where they don't like each other. But we didn't get that for the women's match, and we didn't get that before the Tornado Tag Team match, which could have benefited because it seems like it's been a while since, you know, the audience knew about that angle and knew about that feud. It's been sort of stop and start due to injuries, I think. And so it would have benefited there, you know, so one step forward, one step back for AEW on that score. Tonight overall, I thought, felt there were a lot of backstage promos and angles. It felt very WWE-like in that regard. And I don't recall there ever being this many on a Dynamite. I wonder if that's a one-week change of direction or a new thing going forward. And if so, if it's a new thing going forward, why is that?
And I'd have to go back and review, and obviously I haven't had time to do that, doing the show immediately after Dynamite. But it seemed like a lot of those interviews were, like, interrupted or, like, they were set up to be one thing and then someone barged in. And I guess I'm for sort of a you know, 80% baseline of when there's an interview scheduled. It just happens. And some of them felt a little, I don't know, amateurish isn't the word, but I guess unpolished is probably a better way to put it. You know, I feel like if AEW is going to suddenly throw a lot of these wrestlers into promo segments, getting them more reps for the last couple of years on Dark instead of just having, you know, they do some promos on Dark, but I would have been getting some of these wrestlers more reps on the mic than just reps taking bumps and working matches, you know, on camera for Dark or even off camera. It didn't always feel major league to me with some of the stuff that was going on. Did that strike you at all?
I mean, I thought Rosa and Storm was short and kind of stiff. If you're pre-taping it, and there's no reason why you shouldn't pre-tape all of this backstage stuff, I think, in the year 2022, it feels like you could keep going until you get a really good take, right? Or have multiple really good takes to do. The Miro promo, I mean, I don't think very much of Julia Hart. I just think she's young and still finding her, you know, finding her way in the industry. But, you know, you balance that Miro is there, and he's a good enough promo for any two people in the business probably at this point. He's just such a commanding presence. Who never wrestles on Dynamite, but yeah, I don't know. I do agree that, so it's weird. So like Tony Khan has come under criticism, especially no place more than the Torch, for not having enough promos. Everything is just in the ring, not enough video packages, right? And so the one place, to your point, that he can afford to have as many promos, you could even have him do live-to-tape promos in the ring if you want and then edit it later, is Dark and Dark Elevation, right? Literally nobody's watching these shows. I mean, it's just the hardcore, a couple hundred thousand people a week. Give them rep after rep after rep. And I don't watch every week, but my recollection is the only person who's really gotten that chance was Sammy Guevara when he was trying out his new babyface character. Yeah. And those promos just didn't really work, but that's okay. Make the effort. Let him get the reps in.
They do. I mean, there have been just backstage interviews on Dark, but it's just not a staple of the show, and I think they would be, it'd be paying dividends right now doing it. But part of it too is just some of the people being featured maybe aren't primetime players too, and that might be part of it.
Injury related, maybe, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I but it doesn't change. I mean, if the narrative on AEW, if they have the super deep roster and you have a show where you go through a stretch of time where you've got, you know, I mean, I guess Jungle Boy on commentary barely got 10 words out, and he said that would be the case. But it's even like, you know, Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh. I wasn't impressed with that segment with Wardlow, and then FTR joining him, that felt clunky. I don't know how you felt about that, and that was kind of the start of it, just the show having a pretty big gap between, you know, the opening couple matches and the main event. So I don't know. Yeah. I guess this Dynamite was kind of a showcase of some of the best of what AEW does, but also some areas where they need work or where the depth isn't what we think it is, or else they're just not, they're Tony's giving time to people to kind of figure things out on Dynamite at the expense of some other people who are a little bit more polished and you know, just ready for prime time on the microphone.
Yeah, and I mean, looking ahead to Rampage this week, I wrote in my notes Thunder, which is a Freudian slip if there ever was one. you know, Rampage is going to be, look what he was going to be, all promos. You know, the star power was in the promos. And
I know.
The matches were all like, you know, C-level, you know, WWE main event, you know, kind of shows. So it's, I'm, you know, I'm not quite sure what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah, they made a big deal out of Bryan Danielson, Hook, and Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland in three interview segments on Rampage. And then we got a Gun Club match against some wrestlers nobody knows, and another match with two people who, you know, Sonny Kiss has had, what, one Dynamite match in a year and a half, and or maybe longer. And then Ari Daivari is wrestling, and then we got the introduction of another title that has been acknowledged and recognized and featured on an AEW show, the AAA World Mixed Tag Team Titles. Anyway. We got more to talk about than that. Let's go to our first caller and go to air code 313. 313, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Grant from Detroit.
Hey, Grant, good to hear from you. Well, what's on your mind about Dynamite?
So, I think they sold me on going to All Out. Like, with Punk and Moxley in the main event, I think it's worth a four-hour drive. But I was thinking, just with me seeing FTR come back, do y'all think we're going to get another face-to-face matchup? And because I don't really see any other matchups for them besides them versus Swerve and Keith Lee. I mean, what y'all think?
You're saying I got a little lost there. You're saying FTR in a face-to-face match against who?
Yeah, no, I was saying, so we're gonna get CM Punk versus Moxley in a face-to-face matchup. But I was looking, looking around, and I don't really see a match for FTR, but another face-to-face matchup with Keith Lee and Swerve.
Yeah, Eric, the vaunted tag team division, is there an obvious heel tag team? Assuming they don't change the AW tag belts between now and All Out, which would be weird and you know, not a lot of time to turn that around. Is there an obvious team that jumps out to you that will be the heel challengers?
I mean, no one's been built up, and FTR have been the number one contenders for most of 2022. So that's probably the best tag title match you can book, so why not book it? It seemed like they needed a way to shoehorn FTR on tonight, you know, to bring them back onto TV and shoehorn them onto the card. So suddenly they were with Wardlow. You know, when last we sort of saw them, they were with CM Punk right after Double or Nothing. So, I mean, I guess, although they seem to be headed for a feud with, you know, Dutt Singh and Jay Lethal. So maybe that's just a TV program and they'll move up pretty quickly after that. They'll have their six-man tag or whatever and move on. But, tick-tock, 3 weeks to build here to All Out. So let's get going here.
Well, what about the tag team match with Andrade and Rush winning? Could they pivot them into a match? I mean, I guess they might be doing an angle right now as we speak, you know, taping for Rampage with Hobbs and Swerve. Where their tag opponents are set up, and Andrade and Rush had an impressive win. It was as Jim Ross called it, I meant to be a compliment. This is a train wreck. maybe that's his euphemism for a spot fest without a lot of long-term selling, and a lot going on. But I could see Andrade and Rush perhaps with this win being moved up into contendership.
I mean, I guess, you know, the. Maybe things will become clear after the losers of the first round or even the semis of the six-man tournament. I mean, I'm looking at Andrade, Dragon Lee, and Rush, who I would love to see win the six-man tournament because that's a great team right there. Dragon Lee's one of the best wrestlers in the world, against the Bucks and presumably Kenny Omega. Well, I'm pretty sure the Bucks and Kenny Omega are probably wiping out everybody and winning this tournament. So you would have those two free and they have a big win on TV, but I don't know.
Fish and O'Reilly,
they would have to lose. Fish and O'Reilly, I imagine, are not O'Reilly's might not be cleared for competition because they're not in the six-man tournament either.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, unless by then they might be and they can do an angle or announce it. But, I mean, that's not a great backstory, you know, for a tag-team title match. You'd want a team that has momentum, has been winning. You know, I mean, I'm going to assume it's crossed Tony Khan's mind, and a company built on having a strong tag division. I know they have a lot of tag team titles to kind of spread around all the good tag teams. But you'd think for All Out, they'd have something like – in mind in a good 3-week story arc to get that heated up, but nothing's jumping out as obvious to me when I look at the depth chart right now of tag teams either. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious, and I'm going to keep the faith that it's something Tony's got in mind, but I don't know about FTR. Just maybe they just collect another belt and move on, but it seems like Keith Lee and Swerve are just getting started. Yeah. As tag champs and not just transitioning to FTR grabbing more belts.
Well, they're to your point, they are scheduled to appear on Rampage during an interview. And so if it's AEW, they will each get maybe half a sentence out of their mouth, and then somebody's music will hit to challenge them for All
exactly.
Out.
Or the lights will go out. Yeah. Yep. All right, Grant, back to you.
Okay. And then the only other thing that I had, so about the trios tournament, like, I don't know if Adam Cole or Kyle O'Reilly are clear, but I think what if we get the Bucks and Kenny Omega or Hangman in the finals, and then they cost them the Trios titles, would you actually see winning the Trios belt?
It's a good question, Eric. Looking at that, the tournament brackets, do you have a prediction on how that tournament plays out?
I mean, if it's Kenny Omega, I assume it's the Bucks and Omega, because Tony Khan is on record saying he wanted to wait until Kenny was back to hold that tournament. When I thought it was going to be the Bucks and Hangman Page, and believe me, I loved that dramatic, backstage invitation. Will you go to prom with me? And Hangman turned him down. I loved it until Hangman Page said no, because all I want is an Elite reunion. It's all I've ever wanted. And so I'm very disappointed. But
I want to expand on that segment, but go ahead with your six man title predictions first.
So the prediction. After that, I thought, well, I wouldn't think the Dark Order would win, but if Paige is in their corner, they could have a Cinderella run. All they got to do is beat House of Black, because then the right side of the bracket is very weak. The left side of the bracket is like so heavy with great teams, it's tilting over. So the right side of the bracket, House of Black loses to Dark Order, because probably you want House of Black at the pay-per-view against Miro, Sting, and Darby, I assume. So Dark Order scores the upset, and then in the second round, it's Trustbusters. They either face Trustbusters or Best Friends. What if it's Dark Order with Hangman Page in their corner against Kenny Omega and the Bucks in the finals at All Out? I mean, that's a story right there. It's not like the highest profile match you can book, but if they were interested in booking a high profile match, you know, House of Black is the only possible opponents from that right side of that bracket. It seems to me that they're going for story as opposed to star power there. And I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm thinking along those lines. I mean, they've given so much time now to Hangman choosing to be in the corner of Dark Order and turning down the Bucks. And looking at that right bracket, the only other possibility I'm thinking of is Cole, O'Reilly, and Fish will be ready by then, and they're going to somehow injure the Trustbusters or the Best Friends and take one of those spots in the tournament, and they'll end up in the finals, but then they're not going to cross paths with Hangman, which is kind of the story that they've been building. But it would explain more why that right bracket is so weak, is that they're just going to knock somebody out of that bracket. I do have to say, I mean, there's some good three-man teams here, but there's some really unestablished teams and lower-end teams. And if you're trying to establish the six-man titles, don't you want your top most featured stars in that tournament? Anybody who's available. It just seems like there's some other opportunities. I haven't gone through the roster to look, but my God, even the guns, all three of them would because of the TV time they've gotten, add prestige to this, which says something about the lower half of the depth chart here, that the guns would actually improve it, or the Acclaimed and a partner, given how much TV time the Acclaimed get. I would take Bear Country over a couple of these teams in terms of the TV time and how established they are. Don't FTR want the belts? Why not FTR and Wardlow? It just feels like a stripped down tournament in order to avoid big names having to do jobs to other big names. And I just don't think that's a good way to start to start rolling with new titles, is to have a tournament that feels half like B or C level talent.
Well, you have to have some of the guys free to conclude their feuds that they've been building, and you have to have other matches at All Out. So I guess you can't put everybody.
But how many of the tournament matches are going to be at All Out versus how many in the next 3 weeks?
Right, but you're knocking them out. They lose in the tournament so that they can go to All Out in their singles match or their tag match or whatever it is they have scheduled. I mean, the left side of the bracket, Death Triangle, Will Ospreay and Aussie Open, Andrade, Dragon Lee and Roosh, and the Bucks. I mean, that's a great side of the bracket. Those two matches will be killer.
But this isn't all about killer matches. This is about how many people are going to look at that and go, I can't wait to see Death Triangle against Will Ospreay and Aussie Open. How many people say that versus, I'm sorry, can you remind me again who Aussie Open are? You know, that was a July memory briefly, and now you're featuring them in a tournament for titles, and they're not established on Dynamite. They were visiting from New Japan briefly. That's part of a June
memory.
There we go. Yes, yeah.
But you know the House of Black, they're an established team.
I like that. It's
really just the Dark Order are comedy mostly, and guys who lose on Dynamite. Yep. It's the trust busters that stick out like a sore thumb. To Tony Khan's credit, he actually bothered to introduce them on TV this week in a backstage segment instead of just throwing them out there cold. I know they've been on Dark or Dark Elevation, one of the two. I don't know that anyone watches that or cares. And then Best Friends are around. They're established. It's just, the totality of the looking at the two sides of the bracket. I guess you could have if Kyle O'Reilly is not cleared, if Adam Cole's not cleared, you can have the Bucks and Omega win, and then do a title switch or have them feud the Elite versus
you could have
the former NXT guys all through the fall if you wanted.
I mean, Menard and Parker and Hager would improve, have Jericho Appreciation Society represented in this tournament and, time it so they are eliminated from the tournament in time to then hype a match for them if they're going to have one at All Out. I don't know. I mean, it'll be a great match, sure, but, I mean, how much momentum do Death Triangle have right now in Dynamite compared to other wrestlers who are on a lot? So I don't know. I mean, I want to dwell on it. There's going to be some good matches, but I feel like it was sort of booked with the idea of let's have some good matches, but they had, if you're planning for this, give us a month or so of a better job of making it seem like there's a rhyme or reason and logic to how these brackets came about and how the teams qualified or earned their spot compared to some others. If these belts are going to be prestigious, I would think there's more wrestlers who would have assembled trios to go after them.
You know, the Premier League just started. Fulham had a big win, a big tie against Liverpool on last weekend. And the Jacksonville Jaguars are in training camp. So Tony's probably spread pretty thin in August.
And he's running ROH too, So probably not taking a ton of his time at the moment, but yes. No, I agree. And that is that might be an ongoing issue. I mean, I remember when Vince McMahon was starting the XFL the first time, it was a big deal in WWE. People were like, getting storylines cleared, getting Vince's attention, the type of the thought that he was putting into WWE and contributing during that time felt substantially less than it was before the XFL started eating up a lot of his attention, and people felt it was kind of throwing people off and hurting the booking. Some might say, "Oh, would it be better without Vince booking?" Well, at that time, no. And if you don't have someone else declared in charge like Paul Levesque now, it can be kind of, you know, it was a bit of a slog and things started to fall apart a little bit. And that's a concern here with Tony having his attention spread in other places. I talked with Jason on the flagship yesterday. You know, what if Tony Khan did not run two other professional sports teams, did not buy ROH, did not run a New Japan show, did not appear on Impact Wrestling, and did not agree to air Rampage as a third hour or Battle of the Belts, which is just like gets less attention than Dark practically. And he just was booking Dynamite. Like, where would we be today? Even with the injuries and the pandemic, would Dynamite be in a better place? Now, I'm not saying in the overall scheme of things in his professional life, it'd be worth a trade-off, but I don't think there's any doubt Dynamite would be a better show. And this is a compliment to Tony if it got more of Tony's attention, because he could not only give it more of his attention and plan ahead more, but he could build a support, spend more time finding that key support team and building them up, because sometimes it does seem like he's spread pretty thin.
Wait, did you not see the press release AEW released last week about all the promotions and all of the new roles and et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm.
Well, there are people who are doing that, getting official titles, which was a good thing they did, that they did that. But it's, you know, it doesn't take away the point Tony being undivided, 2 hours of Dynamite every week and a quarterly pay-per-view getting all his attention would probably lead to a better book product.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll go back to Grant. Anything else you want to follow up on there, Grant?
No, that's all I have for today. I definitely get back with y'all next week and go VIP.
Cool. Thanks, Grant. Appreciate it. You can be the next caller. Give us a call. Our number is 347-215-8558. And you can chime in on anything we're talking about or anything we haven't talked about yet. Just push 1 on your keypad. Eric, I want to go to an email because this is regarding the topic that we were spending most of our time on here. Chris Fielder of Truth or Consequences New Mexico said, I just have a single question for you guys. What are the odds that Kenny Omega is the Young Bucks partner? I've heard some say his return will be sooner rather than later, and then I've heard some say his injuries are worse than first thought. I think both might be true. I think it would be pretty damn cool to have him back with the Bucks and win the Trios title and then feud with a healthy Undisputed Elite or whatever you want to call them. Eric, you brought that up. Chris is bringing it up. Do you like that as the way to reintroduce Kenny, that Kenny was there for the Bucks when Hangman wasn't? And if that's the case, what story do you tell? Are the Bucks, are fans supposed to be happy that the Bucks got jilted by, turned down by Hangman, and they're coming off of being turned on by Cole O'Reilly and Fish? We're supposed to still take joy in that because Hangman made his case. Yeah, you can be apologetic, but not all is forgiven instantly. I'm going to stand by the people who were with me all along. Didn't really make a case to be like super excited about the Bucks right now, even if you maybe, if you take them, it's pro wrestling, so you wonder about sincerity, but if you believe they're being sincere, it's a step in the right direction. But then Kenny comes back, and for what purpose? To avenge Hangman saying no, and Kenny's their second choice? It's not like this really fiery return as a baby. It's not a great way to turn babyface, is to be the second choice and sort of be opposite of Hangman and Dark Order, who are a pretty sympathetic group in many circles, not all circles. Eric.
Well, when we last saw Kenny Omega, I think it was the Dynamite after the full
wasn't it on, Eric, wasn't it on Eric, wasn't it on Being the Elite? Was that the last time we saw Kenny? Technically?
Was it on Being the Elite?
In the hotel room? Didn't they do a whole skit? You're the one used to keep me up to date on Being the Elite. But I thought Kenny was in the hotel room and said, this is it, guys. I got to go. And it's been nice, but maybe I'm conflating two things. It's a genuine.
The last memory I have of Kenny Omega being seen, I think, was on Dynamite. And it was after the pay-per-view, at Full Gear pay-per-view in Minneapolis at the same arena they were at tonight. Yeah. And Kenny had not seen the presumably the video. He went out of his way to say he had not watched the pay-per-view match back because he was so distraught, which means he missed the Bucks having a chance to interfere and save his bacon, and the Bucks both just gave a head nod to Hangman Page in that match, and then Hangman Page went on to win the AEW World title. So has Kenny watched that match back in the time he's been off? That would be question one. I mean, Kenny Omega also in that promo, if I'm recalling correctly, said, thanks, you know, Hanger, you were the better wrestler, right? So potentially a face turn if he wants to. Where's Don Callis? Is Don Callis coming back with Kenny? Does that cause, tension? I assume it's Kenny Omega returning, or alternatively, something happens and he can't be, Hangman Page said he was going to not be in the six-man tournament. I mean, you could always do something to change that, an injury angle or whatever. It does set up an interesting dynamic because the Bucks ostensibly are faces or after being turned on.
Yeah.
And, maybe they let this play out. I assume where they are headed for the fall is a face Omega and Bucks against Cole, O'Reilly and Fish, with various combinations of singles matches and ultimately a six-man title match would be my guess. That seems to make sense. It also allows, I think Kenny Omega should be injected immediately back into the top of the card singles mix.
Yeah.
He's that level of star. However, if you're just coming back and from a bunch of procedures and rehabs and you don't have your sea legs under you yet, What better place to get your feet back under than in a six-man tag where you can do as much or as little as you want?
Yeah. I mean, that sometimes is a consideration, the just getting your sea legs under you, and that might have been part of why Punk was pushed the way that he was. All right, I was going to read another email on the six-man titles, but first I want to get to Craig from Toledo, who has called us up. Craig, what are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight?
Can you hear me okay?
I mean, you sound like you're under a pillow.
How about now?
40% better. Keep talking. We can post-produce you louder.
Okay.
Go ahead, Craig. Yep.
Can you hear me better now?
Now you're good. Yeah, now you sound normal. Now you're good.
All right. I've been watching AEW since the beginning, and I've noticed they have kind of fallen into a rut with some of these patterns that they have. They have the, every Lucha match has a mask spot. They have, of course, the 9:25 women's match. stuff like that. They have, and then the giant brawl after the match. Just things like that. They're really formulaic, and I think they're falling into a pit that WWE kind of did. And like I checked out WWE the last couple of weeks to see if anything kind of changed yet. A lot of people were really excited about it, but they're looking at it from they've been watching it week to week, and they get to see it from, we've been watching it week to week, and we can see the glaring changes. I look at it and see, it's kind of still the same to me almost. And I was wondering if you guys felt the same kind of way in the formulaic kind of way.
Eric. We talked specifics, and you talked about, good match, good start, good finish, a lull in the middle. Broaden that out to what Craig is talking about, the larger AEW right now. Are they in a rut? You're introducing and not pushing back on the idea that Tony spread too thin. So that's telling. But is AEW different than a year ago, 2 years ago, in terms of the sense of momentum or the sense of knowing who they are and knowing who their audience is and delivering that product consistently to them?
Yeah, I don't think there's a disconnect between what they're delivering and what the audience wants. I think, I would have to really review a few Dynamites to know. I know last week the women's tag match was in the first hour of the show, right? That really good, really well-reviewed, really well-liked tag team match with Jamie Hayter and Britt versus Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm, Thunderstorm. Yep. And I think the ratings might have fallen off for it, even though they didn't put it in that second hour third quarter segment that that Craig just referenced. I think to me, what AEW lacks, and you and Todd Martin have brought this up on The Fix a while back, and it maybe even last year, and it still holds true. They need a quality control person, like somebody who's really, really in the weeds, in the details, and points out, hey, we're doing the same thing in two segments in a row. We're having the babyface get, you know, be stupid, or we're having the heels use interference to get over on the babyfaces, and tell people no, or at least make Tony Khan aware of it. Hey, I know you booked this, but this is repetitive in these three segments are repetitive, these two segments or whatever it is. And just sort of make him aware that it may be intentional, right? It may not be a bug, but a feature. But AEW would probably be a more satisfying product overall, and maybe be able to attract, I don't know about attract new fans, but there would be, if there was less repetition and somebody who had their eye on the ball, a quality control person, I think the promotion would improve overall. What do you think, Wade?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I think there should have been somebody to tell Ricky Starks, you just turned babyface. Maybe the best move for you isn't leaping over the ringside barricade scared of QT Marshall coming your way. You know, I mean, you could say, well, you know, but he's outnumbered and he's going to celebrate amongst the fans. And I would say, yeah, but you're still running scared from QT Marshall and leaping over the barricade. There just has to be somebody in the process who says, I get what you're thinking. My fresh set of eyes is telling you, I think it could come across this way. Let's not do this. And it's not like the biggest problem on the show, but like when you were talking about quality control, I would say that's an issue. I don't know what Sanjay Dutt was looking for into the ring. Was that? Do you have an idea what happened there, Eric?
Was he looking for? He was looking for plunder, I assume, right? Some sort of plunder.
Yeah.
And didn't have it. And I don't know. Whatever it was, they seemed to cover for it pretty well by going to the surround the ring bit. And so that, you know, you didn't really know that there was something wrong, but clearly based on Sanjay's reaction, there was something wrong.
Yeah, and I felt Wardlow just exhaled, like, oh, that sucked, at the end. Honestly, that was my body language read. But I don't have his body language facial expressions memorized yet, you know, in terms of his acting. But I didn't get the sense that that segment went the way that the players wanted.
Can you imagine when they go to the Wardlow singles match?
Oh, God.
Oh my God.
I know.
Do we still have negative stars? Does the Torch have negative stars?
Sure. One call for stars? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Yeah. We might have to break out that key on your keyboard, dust it off.
Yes. And, you know, even like, I don't know if this plugs as quality control, and I'm kind of getting to that middle part of the show that was a bit of a rut, but why are we making a big deal out of Pat Buck getting knocked around? I will say that I am pleased that the announcer said there should be ramifications for that. He is a non-combat official. I guess that means, you know, you don't get suspended for beating up security guys, even though their job isn't to get beat up. You don't get suspended for beating up wrestlers. But when you beat up a non-combatant or whatever Russ said, you know, there should be ramifications. But all of a sudden they're treating Pat Buck like a bigger deal than half the wrestlers on this show. Like, oh my God, you know who that is? That's Pat Buck. And it's like, yeah, in New York, you don't know this. He appeared like 40 out of 52 weeks on WWE TV running out as a WWE official before he jumped to AEW.
Right.
And they didn't draw a lot of attention to it on WWE TV, but people were like, who's this redheaded guy? You know, like he was on TV so much that people started wondering who the guy was. And I'm not quite sure why AEW decided to then make a big deal out of that unless they just wanted to, like, check a box next to all the people in their press release last week about the support team and give all of them some FaceTime on the subsequent TV show. That's not a defense of it, but that might be a reason.
I think you're being overly cynical there, Wade. I think it's as simple as the dynamic right now between Jungle Boy and Christian is screwed up because you have two guys on the face side and one on the heel side, and they didn't introduce somebody to be Christian's partner in all this. They needed to get Luchasaurus out of the mix. You know, either I assume Luchasaurus was going to still be have mixed feelings, and maybe he would turn on Jungle Boy
before
too long. And you would have a Jungle Boy Luchasaurus match on Dynamite before the pay-per-view as sort of the gatekeeper to before he gets to Christian at All Out. That's not going to happen, so suspending him is the next, you know, is the way. Otherwise, fans would be asking it All Out, well, why isn't Luchasaurus at ringside to, you know, help Jungle Boy, right? Keep him off TV for a month, then you don't have that problem.
Yeah, and no, you're right, but the idea, I think it was more the tone. That's Pat Buck. Like, they said it like we're supposed to know who he is. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it just came across as that should be noteworthy, as opposed to that's an AEW official. He's not a wrestler. And you can say his name or not, but the stress was like, that's Pat Buck. Like, everyone should know. It was just one of those little things about it where I'm like, I'm not quite sure what they're going for. And you don't want, as a viewer, to be wondering, why did they stress that? Am I supposed to know who this guy is? Because so many people are showing up on Dynamite who, if you don't watch Dark, you don't know who they are.
Right. You could have mistaken him for Mark Sterling, potentially. That's on the announcers, though, right? And or the people who are producing the announcers.
Right.
The announcers are supposed to get that over, right?
Pat
Buck's not
getting
promo time. He needs, you know, that needed to be somebody in the, what was it, a 4 or 5-man booth at that point. Needed to make that clear.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump back to Craig. Did we address your question or topic, or do you want to introduce another one?
Yeah, well, pretty much you did. But just to add on to it, a lot of it is looking like kind of that house of torture or whatever in New Japan, where it's almost unwatchable. The New Japan part, I'll watch AEW, that's fine. But it's getting there where every main match has some kind of angle attached to it, whereas the only time you get, well, I don't want to say the only time, but you know what I mean, where you get a true winner, true loser, the music plays, and then they go off and, you know, they move on to the next segment. You don't get that in the major matches. You get that in the, you know, the mid-card matches, which I can understand as they're trying to build pay-per-views and whatever, and feuds for next week and everything. But I love the promos that they've been doing. Like, the promos are the reason I watch. Like, I can play around on my phone or play on my computer during the matches because I know what's going to happen. But the promos when I really tune in and really enjoy what I'm watching. My next thing was, do you guys think this BCC and JAS thing is going to keep going? Or was that just something, like some kind of weird transition? Because I'm over that so bad.
Thanks, Craig. Eric, what do you think?
I mean, you would have thought that the Blood and Guts match was the natural conclusion to the feud, right?
Yeah.
But here we are, and we've got another Bryan Danielson, Daniel Garcia match on Dynamite next week, which undoubtedly will be good. You've got Eddie Kingston taking on Sammy Guevara at the pay-per-view that was announced last week. I don't know who Jericho is going to face since he just lost his title match. So it seems like they are continuing it now, doing the singles matches that they didn't do in the build-up to Blood and Guts. So a little bit just like last year when the Blood and Guts match was not the blow-off to the feud between Jericho's previous group and the people they were feuding against, you've got the same dynamic going on where it's just a continuation in singles matches. So, you know, I mean, it's fine, I guess. I'm more of a traditionalist. I like the cage match to be the end of the feud, I guess. But, you know, they do have 2 hours of TV time to fill every week plus Rampage.
Could they do Claudio and Wheeler versus Matt and Angelo, Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, or, you know, just a sort of like a supporting tag match? Is that how you want Claudio to be featured after becoming ROH champion and being this big acquisition? Like, if I step back even from the specific of the run-in tonight and the idea of you know, this feud should be settled with JAS, Claudio is somebody who you bring him in, and it seems like you could get some momentum. This time period, this stretch of 1, 2, 3 months is, if you list what is AEW, what are the top six things happening in AEW, Claudio's story should be one of those six. When you acquire him and he comes in red hot, he fills in for Bryan Danielson, he wins the ROH title, and it's just I just feel like there's it's weird, but a bucket of ice cold water poured on the potential that he could have had if he was more consistently presented as a centerpiece character on Dynamite. I don't mind his promos as much as some people, but I do know the crowd loves him. He has some name value. I don't mean put him in the world title picture, but tell more of what his story is, and don't just have a pay-per-view where he wins the title and then we just see him kind of doing run-ins. What do you think about that in addition to the other aspects that we're talking about?
I mean, that tag match you booked would be a Dynamite match at most. I don't think they've established Mac Daddy and Daddy Mac, whatever their names are, as you know, a strong tag team. And I think besides that, Matt Menard, I think he was interviewed somewhere and said he was injured early on in the Blood and Guts match.
Yeah.
So he may be on the shelf, running maybe all he can do. I don't know. You could do, to your point, you could do Claudio and Jericho at All
yeah.
Out.
I'm
not sure. I don't know how you book the finish, because I'm not sure Jericho wants to be the ROH champion, and it's too early to have Claudio lose the belt, and I'm not sure Jericho wants to do two jobs in a row. Maybe he does.
Yeah.
He probably has the stroke to not if he doesn't. But we already have two singles matches going on there. So
yeah.
out of that continued feud. So I don't know what plans they have for Claudio, but I'm sure he didn't come cheap. So he's probably on the pay-per-view.
To Craig's point, though, you do want to get you do want AEW to establish feuds, get settled, and then teams move on. And be aware of the optics if it appears that's not the case, you know, and Craig noticed, and probably some other people did too. Okay, let's keep rolling through calls and emails. If you want to join us, you can. You can still email WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, and you can also phone in 347-215-8558, and when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That's 347-215-8558. I did not attend the show tonight. I felt bad about how my schedule worked out. I won't get into the details of why, but I am out of town and was unable to be there. So if you are getting out of Target Center now after the Rampage taping and want to be the on-site correspondent that I thought I would be, please give us a call and push 1 on your keypad and let us know that you can be on the show, because we'd love to hear what happened on Rampage, because it seems like there might be some angles that will answer some of the questions that we have here. And so, yeah, consider yourself invited. All right. First things first, so we got Bryant in Boston on hold. And then I believe we've got Greg in Kansas City on deck. Go ahead, Bryant. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
It mirrored a lot of what happened last week. The thing, it wasn't too chaotic. Matches and things afterwards got a chance to breathe. I didn't feel like I was, you know, in the middle of, I didn't feel like I was in the middle of a rush job or something about that. Did you guys notice that as well?
Eric, we talked about there being more backstage segments, more interviews. Did the show as a result feel less chaotic or less just one thing wedged in after another? I noticed after the opening match, we got a video package after Darby and Brody, which we should talk about, and they kind of did highlights of the match that just concluded. And that's not something AEW, I think, does much of. And it was like, a chance to breathe a little and let something sink in, absorb what happened, relive a couple of the high points, and really give the emphasis to the big moments in the match and have it feel like it's not just on with the next thing. And so that was positive. I mean, even if we're critical of kind of the minor league vibe or just the lack of buildup to a lot of the people featured in the middle of the show and some below average execution of some things, it didn't feel frenetic to me. It didn't feel breathless, but I wouldn't say it felt like a SmackDown either, where it's you know, just, you know, slow. It paced even slower than that. Eric, your thoughts?
The only time I felt like they were rushing through things was the Texas Tornado, Lucha Tornado tag team match with Andrade and Rush against Lucha Bros. And I could have used a video package to recap the feud because I couldn't remember. I know the heels caught the faces some matches in some form or another, but I didn't remember the specifics of it. I mean, I think they did a lot. It was still packed with angles, but it probably was helped a little bit by the fact that they went to the main event around 8:30, around 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 Central. And so, you know, you have a lot of time for one thing, then, you know, you're not really rushing through a whole bunch of other things, right? So they didn't get to pack everything wall to wall like they normally would. When they started going to the quick roll call of matches for Rampage and next week's Dynamite, I knew we were in for a main event was not going to be shortchanged, and it wasn't.
So I've got you marked down as pro video package. All right, I'm glad.
I don't want WWE pay-per-view 7 to 10 minute between matches.
No,
I don't mind. I'm old, so I remember when the Bushwhackers would have a squash in the early 90s on WWE, and they would have a little inset promo, right? Bring back the inset promo where you just take 5 to 10 seconds and establish the previous feud, or give me 15 to 30 seconds. These guys have been feuding for weeks, and they've cost each other matches, and now they're going to duke it out in the ring. It just, you know, to me, it's not that I don't like there are any video packages needed. I just don't think it needs to be 5 minutes like WWE. There's a happy medium somewhere.
Well, I'm glad we're in agreement all along, and my thoughts that you were arguing, that you were making a strawman argument against me was not accurate, because you and I are on the same page as far as that goes. Because although I will say this,
you want the video packages longer than I do, I think, but we are a lot closer to the same place than we used to be.
Yeah,
because I moved. Yeah,
and I would also say that after the ROH pay-per-view and after Forbidden Door, I'm not saying 5 or 7 minute video package, but I wouldn't mind a 3 minute video package to open up Dynamite. I mean, WWE survives. They do these video packages. They still got 2.1 million people watching SmackDown, and you know, give or take a little bit. And you do that video package, even if Tony thinks he's losing a few viewers, you're saying what just happened that either you paid for or you missed out on was really important. Don't let it happen again. And let's catch you up if you didn't see it on these big things that we told you last week were monumental. And we're going to let you know what happened because it's too important to not cover in a 2 to 3 minute video package or sprinkle it in throughout the show, going in and out of commercial breaks if you want to keep things shorter. But after pay-per-views, I would do that. I wouldn't do it every week. I don't think you have to go to the extreme that WWE does, you know, with a pretty long show opening video package. Although we'll see what Paul Levesque's pattern is once we get past, you know, the day after SummerSlam, you know, or the week after SummerSlam, where there were a lot of video packages, which, by the way, I think is brand building. You know, when you show those, I don't know how much you saw, if any, Eric, but what they did to make SummerSlam feel like the Super Bowl and on Raw and SmackDown afterwards, that's brand building. That's just not WWE brand. That's SummerSlam brand. You're saying this thing is such a big deal. We're showing you these opulent, amazing visuals of the stadium, the ring entrances, the finishes, Paul Levesque would say, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. I would say it. He would say it. We both would say it. It really emphasized this is a big deal every year. And AEW doesn't do a lot of pay-per-views, so I'd do it after every one of their major pay-per-views, too. I would find a way to make the pageantry of those shows feel big that next Dynamite.
Perhaps after the new TV deal is signed, Tony Khan will catch his breath.
Yes. I just don't want him to book scared until then because I think he'll get a better TV deal not booking scared.
But by the way, do you know when this TV deal runs through? The end of 2024. So we still got
we're,
the time.
We're, that's the thing. Like he'll be fine. I mean, it's going to be negotiated.
Right.
You know, sooner
I was just
than
making that the cheap apologize.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to, back to Bryant. Bryant, any other topic you want to bring up?
I think somebody hung up on me by mistake.
I did, but I saw you dropped off, but I saw your call, but it.
Yeah, the phone disconnected for some reason. I didn't push any buttons, but whatever. I got to say that the Rampage last week was pretty good, but the Rampage this week, other than the Bryan Danielson segment, looks pretty shitty. I mean, they, you know, if you want Rampage's numbers to go up, you got to give people something to watch and not the crap that they do most of the week, because most of the time it's minor matches. And yeah, I understand the need to like pre-record stuff, but if people already know like the outcomes of the matches beforehand, or if it's pre-taped, that doesn't help with the ratings either. But, you know, just to bring back to the point about the Discovery deal.
Brian, see there? Looks like a cell signal issue might be going on here. Yep, now we can hear you.
Oh, okay.
You're just cut out again briefly for some reason.
Yeah. Maybe it's that quake by the lake messing things
up. It's
reached
you in Boston. Yep.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I personally think AEW will be okay if, you know, Discovery doesn't pay them what they want, somebody else will, just hopefully, you know, not something minor league. I could see a scenario where the CEO, David Zaslav, comes to Khan with a counter and says, we'll pay you, like, say, for instance, twice what you're making now, which is probably about the minimum of what Khan would probably accept. But in exchange for that, drop the ROH thing. Like, drop the ROH demand for, like, a TV deal. You see maybe Discovery coming up with that sort of a deal as a compromise or something?
Well, I'm not sure I'm right about this, Eric, but I'm not in the – I'm worried about AEW camp, or I want to turn this into, like, this big drama. I think things will shake out and he'll be just fine. And as I told Jason, I'm not particularly interested in getting all worried about really rich people making a deal with really rich people that isn't as rich as the rich people thought it would be at one point in time. I think AEW is going to be just fine. Are they going to be as great, you know, as everyone thought? Well, maybe not, but I mean, it's just, I don't care how many private jets, you know, Tony Khan gets to buy, or, I mean, the thing is, I have confidence in Tony Khan being able to book a successful promotion, drawing really strong cable demo ratings. That's going to get him a good cable deal one way or the other, with even a talent roster that isn't competing for more top names from WWE, because I think Tony Khan's booking a different product than WWE, and I think the fans, even under Paul Levesque's vision of WWE, fans are going to want an alternative, and I think Tony Khan and the crew he has, even if it changes over time, is going to be absolutely capable. I think the AEW brand is established, and their future does not their survival does not depend on the next TV deal being great. Where are you on that?
I mean, I think Tony Khan was quoted in right around the time of the Arthur Ashe mid-September show last year when he was in New York and did the New York media rounds. I think he said AEW is profitable and later amended that statement already at the time, amended that statement to say, well, we'd be profitable if we didn't see however many figures he did into the video game development.
Oh, God.
and so,
Penny.
Not a good Penny. Idea.
Yeah. And so in theory, getting AEW should be able to survive and thrive with just getting a two-time, you know, a doubled rate, which right now I think the contract is estimated at $44 million a year. It would go up to $88 million a year. I'm sure he was hoping for, you know, to bump it to 120 or 160 even, you know, three to four times. But, you know, I mean, I guess it depends. To a large extent, WWE has more money than God, will have even more money when they get their next TV deal, I would imagine. And does Triple H decide to pay wrestlers more? Does he outbid Tony Khan for all of the free agents? How many free agents are only motivated by money? I feel like the people who are motivated more by craft have already left WWE under Vince, maybe. You know, your Moxleys and Punks and Danielsons. Jericho. So, you know, the more money he gets, the more money he doesn't have to spend out of his family fortune, Tony Khan, to sign free agents. But I generally agree, AEW is not going away. It's established.
And there's also corners he can cut he can go six pay-per-views instead of four, and he can cut the bottom third of the roster, take the heat on social media, because everybody who ever gets hired deserves to keep their job forever, according to social media, and take some heat and run a tighter ship. And he probably won't have the free agents that he's able to sign and pay big money to. You know, he's going to have to build some of his own stars. That's something Jason Paul and I talked about yesterday on the flagship. You know, is that a skill that he has shown a high aptitude for? I would argue not, but I also think it's been a weird 3 years with a pandemic and a lot of injuries and then a chance to make big signings that I think have displaced what would have been other wrestlers getting a push and rising up the card. Tony Khan is three decisions away from becoming profitable. It's just he's still building his factory. And when you build a factory, you're not profitable right away. But eventually the economy scale kicks in and you make money. So, I mean, if he's roughly breaking even now, it's just he's going to be fine. And this is not the Carter family where, you know, Dixie Carter's going to the parents going, give me more money. And the family's like, we don't have enough to give you more. We don't want to. I mean, I think Tony's going to be just – they're going to be around is my point. And they'll find a way to make money. I mean, there's other decisions that can be made to turn them profitable if profit becomes the number one priority. That has not been as of this point. Growth has been. And growth and profit don't always move at the same speed in a business.
I mean, I think moving to six pay-per-views a year would help the booking. It's everything's got a peak for four times a year. And so you get sort of this between pay-per-views, you got 3 months and things just sort of are adrift sometimes.
Yeah.
Six pay-per-views would just bring more focus. I think if they added two more, Forbidden Door showed us they could still get north of 120,000 buys. And as for ROH, I know this is probably an unpopular opinion. I would not care if Tony Khan just, you know, was unable to get a deal and just he just uses it for the tape library or streaming service, and that's it. I don't see why.
I agree.
I know Discovery just bought the place, and they're figuring things out. They're probably not really focused on AEW, but if you're going to combine the HBO and the Discovery streaming services, why not put an hour of ROH wrestling every week on there? It what does it hurt? It might get you some subscribers, right? It seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't know how much they're going to give Tony Khan though to do that.
And I guess part of it is just the branding. I mean, it's already a bit of a mess combining Discovery and what they feature and HBO Max and what it features, because it feels like they are distinctly different products that each have their own identity. But, you know, consolidation of streaming services feels necessary because, you know, the Roku grid is huge right now. And, you know, trying to figure out, you know, something on Amazon Prime or Hulu, or did I just watch that rerun of my favorite show on Peacock, or was that on Netflix? It's like there at some point, you know, it's probably going to come down, you know, the merging and gaining strength and becoming a dominant, you know, top three or four streaming service is probably the direction things are going. I don't know. HBO Max and Discovery merging as a company, that's fine. Well, maybe not fine, but that's not my point. Merging into one streaming service feels weird. I don't know. Yeah. It's like ESPN merging with PBS. Like, that just wouldn't work.
Right.
It makes no sense. It's almost that weird to me, you know?
Admittedly, ROH fits in better with the Discovery side than the HBO side.
I know, yeah. But it really doesn't fit with either. That's the catch. But we'll see what shakes out. I mean, it's very early in this process, and there's some things people are reacting to that we might look back on as overreacting, and we might not. It might be a complete disaster. The AOL-Time Warner merger was a disaster, and they split up again. So, you know, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, go ahead, Brian. I've heard you guffawing a bit in the background and reacting. Anything you want to elaborate on?
Well, I will say I'm not freaking out over the Warner cuts like Todd Martin was on the other show and shots fired. he also thought the Yamashita Rosa match was good. I thought that match was crap and I thought it wasted a lot of time. But anyway, I'll get to my main point, get to the women like I usually do every week. The Rain Cargill match, it was okay. I mean, you know, it was either going to be okay or it was going to be a massive train wreck. Thankfully, it was okay. And, you know, Athena, it seems to me like, I don't know if that, they did mention on commentary that Statlander was out with an injury, and I haven't heard anything about that. Like, I check, like, the wrestling news websites, you know, every day, like, once a day. I haven't heard anything about Statlander being injured, so whether that's legitimate or not, I don't know. But it seems to me like Cargill's probably going to lose at some point to maybe Athena and All Out, because I think her run's becoming a little dry, and I don't necessarily agree with a lot of people who think she's going to become like a main big money-making superstar. I just don't see it myself. But the Toni Storm Thunder Rosa segment was interesting. I thought like the promo thing was a little wooden, you know, because the material they were doing wasn't exactly great. It's like, two good guys, you know, kind of, it's like face versus face, things don't always work. But I am interested as to how that's going to play out. Like, is Storm going to take on Rosa at All Out, or are they going to set up a fatal four-way with Baker and Hayter? I tend to think Rosa's reign is going to end at All Out. And, you know, to be honest, it's been okay, but, you know, it hasn't been like as good as one would hope. And I think Storm might be the one to finally win the belt. And just I'll end with that and just wondering your guys' thoughts on that whole thing. Anyway, have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, you too. Yeah, Eric, a few things there. The Thunder Rosa Storm segment I did think was clunky. I thought the whole middle part of the show was clunky. I thought the tornado tag match felt like it was four wrestlers who thinks the star rating gets higher if they can pack six big spots into a per minute on average, as opposed to just five or four or three, which is exciting, but it sort of, you know, becomes a blur after a while. I thought it at the end, there was a bit of a story with the mask that was, you know, cleverly done. Although then you had the fans, I don't know what happened to the fan who tried to keep the mask and didn't throw it back, or if the fan did and it just didn't make it back into the ring. But that was a fun TV moment. But what stood out to me is Athena running in behind Jade Cargill, who's Jade's celebrating her win. And Athena runs in and just acts like an idiot behind her, like, here I am, making all these gestures, and then attacks her. And I'm like, are we supposed to like her? Is she the baby face here? And what have they done to establish who she is, other than these awkward interviews where she just seems delighted with herself, but there's nothing, we don't know anything about her. You know, it's another case of, you know, Tony Khan, unfortunately, just putting someone on TV because they were somewhere else, and not really figuring out who they are, what he wants the storyline beats to be of their character, and kind of leave them to sink or swim on their own, but feels perhaps some pressure on the outside to go with it. And I don't think it's clicking, and I don't see signs that it's going to. So, Eric, you can latch on any of that and respond.
I did not think Madison Rayne and Jade Cargill was a very good match. I think I looked it up. You know when Athena debuted? She debuted at Double or Nothing at the end of May.
Yeah.
And here we are in 3 weeks, three more Dynamites before All Out. And it seems like they were running with this Athena and Statlander versus the baddies, Cargill and the baddies, for forever, right?
Yeah.
Weeks and weeks. There were promos. There were run-ins. There were singles matches. And
bad promos, bad run-ins, bad singles matches, but anyway.
And they were – and, you know, I don't think Athena was necessarily a bad signing. I think she's got some charisma. Not a terrible worker, not going to be going to Stardom anytime soon. But Athena's just been wasted so far for the reasons you said. And I don't – should Athena be the one to beat Jade? I don't know. I don't know what else you do with Jade, to Brian's point, at this point. But it seems a shame to end the winning streak also without, you know, to Wade's point, not really firmly establishing Athena and who she is. I mean, I feel like if you're going to have somebody get the rub from ending Jade Cargill's streak, you know, really, really build them up. And, it becomes either it's an underdog story or she finally loses to an established, experienced wrestler, women's wrestler who takes that title, like a Toni Storm or, you know. And so, boy, I don't know. And for the women's title match, are they going back to Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa at All Out? It sure seems like it. Tony's penciled in as the number one contender, and I feel like I've seen that match, but I guess it was only once. Is that right, Brian?
Yeah.
Probably knows.
Yeah, I think it was just once.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not clear. As Jason Paul and I talked on the flagship yesterday, there's always not a mulligan, but an asterisk next to criticism of Tony Khan's booking in a broad sense because of all the injuries he's dealing with, and this does throw a wrench into things, with Chris Statlander being out of the mix and kind of that having maybe a bit of a cascade effect on things. But man, I don't know how much Tony Khan time he spends on social media during the week, but maybe experiment for 2 weeks and put the phone down and hold booking meetings with the trusted staff of idea people and pick out your top wrestlers who you're featuring at All Out. And say and review what have we done to establish who this person is and how people should feel about them. Has that been on our largest platform, Dynamite? If not, what can we do? And then communicate with that wrestler what you're thinking, get their feedback, and then talk to the producers and go, what are the strengths and weaknesses of this person as a performer? And let's find a way to refine some things that we've seen early on that seem like they're not clicking or maybe not getting the reaction or coming across as we intend. And just bring some more refinement to the show. I feel like there's a lot of segments where there's a booking format sheet that QT fills out with the time stamps once Tony's filled out the roster and they drop some things in and then someone puts some thought into it the day of the show, but Tony's not in the loop and we get amateur hour or we get sloppiness or we get somebody coming across in a way that is unself-aware and not smooth. And, you know, I mean, Ari Daivari showing up and then you've got Stokely. And you've got Sterling, and you've got Sanjay Dutt, and it feels like they're all doing just some sort of variation of another, but none of them have this distinct, defined character. Is there much of a difference between Hathaway and Sterling at this point? Oh, and then you've got Alex and the assistant, and I mean, I'm pro manager, but like I'm in favor of having managers, but make them distinct and defined and. I don't know. Sometimes I watch a lot of the bulk of AEW and they're producing a lot of content, but it's just that the word that comes to mind is just a lack of refinement to a lot of what's making it to the air. Eric.
Yeah, I've seen, I think somebody on Twitter, Trevor Dame posted that I think you had three different segments on Dynamite tonight where the heel manager was trying to recruit somebody else to their stable, Stokely Hathaway and Julia Hart. And, Ari Daivari was trying to recruit away Orange Cassidy to leave the Best Friends and join the Trust Busters. So, yeah, it's that repetitiveness. As for the women's division, I mean, look, big picture, we're going on 3 years now. It's only rarely been good. I just don't think there's a lot of attention paid to it. Women's wrestling was not a thing in the late 80s, early 90s, or through the 90s when Tony Khan was cutting his teeth as a wrestling fan. And so I don't, you know, doesn't seem like a priority for AEW. And you know, they brought in people, but everything you just said about what you would need to do to improve what you have.
And everything I said, Eric, is not about women or men. I'm not going to be Stephen Colbert and do the joke of I don't see race or whatever. But like, I'm not talking gender when I say this. Like, just apply the same standards to everything. I mean, I don't think that fact that Tony didn't see women's wrestling should, that's not a thing for him, should stop him from using the skill set that he uses to get male wrestlers over and apply that same attention and skill set to men. I don't sit here and count the minutes women get or the minutes of or the how many where they are in a pay-per-view and all that. I think it should be merit-based. There should be some eye on making sure you don't just have shows without the women, but just make sure you're like giving the type of attention to everybody that I described. Like what I said about a booking meeting, I want that to apply to the men and the women, to tag teams and singles wrestlers, to the mid-card and the main event. Anybody who gets TV time, you know, Al Snow would always talk about to wrestlers about that. In OVW, he'd say, you know, when you get to WWE TV, every minute of that TV time is worth this much money. And you need to cherish every minute that you're on the air. And the number of minutes you should spend thinking about and practicing and refining what you're going to do. If you have 3 minutes of TV time or 6 minutes or 1 minute, you should spend 8 hours thinking about what you're going to do for every 5 minutes of TV that you have and making sure it's the best you have, because that time is scarce and valuable. And I just don't see many people approaching. I don't see a ton of people on AEW approaching things that way when it comes to their segments. It feels like, yay, we got freedom now. Let's go point the camera at me and I'll be who I'm going to be. And that will be good enough. And again, that just comes down to that not a female based booking meeting, but a booking meeting where you're sitting down and trying to decide who these people are. It's crazy that Athena's been around as long as she has, as you point out, Eric, and we don't know anything about her other than she's pretty pleased with herself on every promo.
Well, I think the top of the AEW card is usually pretty good, and the pay-per-views have all been great to excellent. So I guess I can live with that.
That's why they're successful and I'm optimistic about them surviving. I'm thinking, how do you get them to that next level? And I think there is a sort of satisfaction that is undercutting AEW's growth, that it seems like Tony Khan thinks all is well if I have some great star ratings and people say my pay-per-view was great. And that's not nothing. It's not nothing. Having great pay-per-views is going to help buy rates. And that is kind of the difference between profit and not at this point. But don't rest on that. That's not what pro wrestling is only. Like, it's not only a claim for good pay-per-views and star ratings. It's about creating stars. It's about getting the most out of the talent that you have. It's about having a refined product and valuing those minutes and not looking like you're spread too thin or putting people on TV without a sense of who they are or conveying that to the audience. So
has this platonic ideal of a wrestling promotion ever existed in wrestling history?
I don't know, but I'm not even concerned about that question. What I'm concerned about is, are there things when I watch Dynamite every week that can make it better? If it's never happened before, it has 18 times. It's nothing to do with whether when I watch this product tonight, I can go, there's things I can point to that Tony Khan could start doing right now to make this show or next week's show better. I don't care if it's existed or not. That doesn't really matter whether I think it's possible to start making it happen starting next week.
I mean, I think for the longest time in its existence, AEW looked good and could paper over those things because it was new and because WWE was such a crap show under Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
Now there's a new sheriff in town on the other side in the other promotion, and NXT was a really enjoyable show for many years while Levesque was booking it. And so is that the thing that finally gets Tony Khan to focus and pay attention to things other than the top of the card on a consistent basis? We're about to see, because he's lost his home field advantage and looking competent in comparison. And, you know, that's what makes the next 6 months to a year so fascinating.
I know. No, it absolutely is and does. I'm still kind of like, I look at the numbers that AEW draws compared to NXT, and it feels like the gap should be bigger than it is, you know, given that Dynamite is the A show and NXT is the C show, and NXT is not at its peak and doesn't have anything near the star power at its disposal that AEW does, even with the injuries. And yet NXT's, you know, they're not competing, like they're not going to win any week, certainly not in the demos. But in total viewership, it's like it just feels like AEW should be doubling their numbers and you know, easily, and they're not, given the quality and the identity of the two brands right now.
Well, NXT has some TNA at the current moment, and the average audience is a 62-year-old male. So make of that what you will.
Yes. All right, very good. Let's go to Greg in Kansas City. You're up next. Greg, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight? Go ahead, Greg. We cannot hear you. Now we're hearing him. Greg, are you there?
Okay, I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, cool. Yep.
Yeah,
no problem.
It's been a fun conversation, and I'm thinking about things as I listen to the conversation to bring up, and so that's always one of the benefits of these discussions. I enjoy the I enjoy the critical good faith nuance. That's the how I described it before. And a lot of great points being made here tonight. As far as the show itself, I think that those two matches that opened and closed the show are both going to be memorable for various reasons. I mean, the amounts of – people could have a lot of opinions about the amounts of blood that were drawn, but they definitely were memorable in their own ways. I mean, Brody King's Crimson Mask, and then some of the spots in the Jericho Moxley match, and of course the end of the show with CM Punk coming back, I think maybe a little sooner than scheduled, that looks like. So definitely memorable, and the rest of the show was kind of there. And as far as the circle back to the women's division discussion, I thought last week was a really good week for the top women in the company, and I felt this week was a step back as nothing was done to capitalize on what I felt was a very strong week last week. And it's just simply a very contrived, very lackluster, to say the least, backstage segment with Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa. More could have been done to follow up on that. And my last statement on this whole women's division discussion is I will say that Athena, personally, I think that she's very similar to somebody like Apollo Crews, or maybe even Cesaro to an extent, in that she's extremely athletic, extremely talented in the ring, but there's something missing on the to go along with that. But she has proven, like in her matches with Asuka and NXT, that she can really wrestle at an elite level when necessary. And I'm with the co-host that, yeah, she just does not feel like it's just – there's – something is not going right with this run so far. And I can't help but wonder if people like her and Toni Storm, like, maybe they would never express it publicly, but I can't help but wonder if there's a little bit of buyer's remorse at some level or another about the way things turned out with Triple H back in power. But I digress. But I'll just say this about the women's division. Without watching the shows closely, it's pretty amazing. You'll see, like, talents that haven't been on Dynamite in months on Dark and Dark Elevation. Like, you've got Hikaru Shida on there every week lately, and Shida never got a chance be a strong women's champion, in my opinion. She was always overshadowed by Britt Baker, and it was during the pandemic. So it's that definitely the case is that Tony, there's not an interest in women's wrestling, and he either like can pay lip service to it or make real changes. And as you said, like, just figure out how you could use some of these things to your strength, even if it's not something you're particularly interested in building to such a level that you are the men's division.
Yeah, I think it takes a little extra work, because what Tony hasn't had on the women's side of things, because again, I'll preface this. I think the skill set or the approach that you take to get your storylines over should be gender blind. I mean, just there's things you should do to get characters over and build stars and tell stories and put wrestlers on journeys and tell those stories. And those that can be gender blind. Like, you don't have to have separate rules. But that said, he had the availability to sign Toni Storm and Athena as, like, are those the two biggest signings? And then if you compare that to CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole, Malakai Black, Christian Cage, Miro, whom I'm forgetting a couple people. But anyway, actually, Fish and O'Reilly, and that's not even who I was trying to think of, but all these acquisitions, every one of them is a bigger deal that I just named than Athena, and probably every one of them, other than maybe Bobby Fish, sorry, Bobby, is a bigger deal than Toni Storm in terms of what they immediately brought in terms of having an impact. Oh, Cesaro too. So Tony Khan has not had like Becky Lynch become available or Charlotte become available to just anchor the women's division. And that's part of, I think, why it's, you know, hit or miss a lot of the time, Eric, is there just isn't – they haven't had the good fortune of Vince McMahon driving away or people being disgruntled or whatever, you know, each person has a different reason, becoming available.
Yeah, that is true. They've had more on the male side than the women's side. You thought maybe if Tony Khan really wanted to open his checkbook, Sasha Banks might have been an option, but Vince McMahon is no longer at WWE, so I kind of feel like that's not going to happen. I don't know whose contract is coming up. I don't know who it seems like they've got most of the top women locked up over there. So sometimes, and this is a novel idea, you just create your own stars and you have a commitment to doing so, and you get people over, and AEW's only 3 years old, so, you know, Stone Cold
yeah.
Steve Austin was not Stone Cold Steve Austin when he first came to WWE, but he became Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? He was the ringmaster. So there's always room to grow. You got to pick somebody and build them. I mean, you know, they had their four pillars, right, that they don't talk about anymore. But on the men's side, Britt Baker was, you know, was sort of the closest thing they have to an anchor. Now, she's not a five-star match person, but she's pretty good on the microphone. But, you know, they've done that. So now they're reloading. And I don't know. Does Toni Storm beat Thunder Rosa if that's the match at all out? I don't want to say does it matter, but I kind of like it's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
There shouldn't be two women's titles with the depth of the roster. I mean, I don't get why wrestlers are fighting for one title or the other title, and having two champions takes away the idea that there's like a great, like, I wouldn't have wanted there to be two middleweight champions during Anderson Silva's reign. I mean, I guess we sort of had that with Pride, but, you know, during that historic reign by Anderson Silva in UFC, you didn't have another middleweight title in UFC with different challengers facing two different champions indiscriminately. You know, it just, that takes something away, and it's ridiculous that there's this many titles officially that are AEW titles or that are even recognized and acknowledged by AEW. And now we have the intergender tag titles being acknowledged this week. It's just, even if it's just a one-off, it's just, I don't know it, but the fact that Tony hasn't had the good fortune of women become big name women becoming available at the pace anywhere near the men. You're right. The idea is build them from within, but building stars has not been Tony Khan's strength. I mean, it's just, that's not his strength.
So what about MJF? What about Sammy Guevara? What about Darby Allin? Who was the fourth pillar? I can't remember.
I think Jungle Boy. So
yeah, I mean, they're all
Darby Allin is
not top of the card stars yet, but it's only been 3 years.
I think the Freebirds and Von Erich, or the Horsemen, lasted about 3 years, you know, as an act. You know, the Freebird Von Erich feud lasted about three years.
They were all
years.
Top stars somewhere else before they came to.
But here's my argument about
Rocket.
Here's my argument, though. Darby is as over today as he was when he got himself over after his first couple appearances. And he's in the same spot on the card. Jungle Boy is, I think, more damaged today than he was 3 months ago. And I don't think he's a bigger star than he was a year ago. He might be being, like, quote, pushed more than just hanging around with Marco and Luchasaurus. But I'm not sure he is ready. I don't think anyone is looking at him going, yeah, I can see him headlining a pay-per-view, you know, sometime in 2023 right now. I don't think that's the pace of things with him. Sammy Guevara has been a disaster. I mean, he turned a baby face and had these tone-deaf makeout sessions, and now he's back to being Jericho's lackey, and he's holding a secondary title, but I don't see him improving or being any better off than he was 2 years ago. I think he was doing better work 2 years ago than he was today, and I think people cared more about him 2 years ago than today. So MJF, as Jason Powell and I pointed out, Tony Khan gets credit for getting out of MJF's way. But MJF, and MJF and Tony Khan talked a lot on the phone, but MJF had that act on All In weekend at an indie show we went to, and he brought that to AEW, and he was given the space in, you know, in the oxygen to get that character over in the opponents. And that's good. And Tony gets credit for that, but he didn't, I don't think he took somebody and took him to a higher level than they were just ready to go themselves. So I'm talking about, like, where is somebody who start, like, you could say Wheeler Yuta is at higher than he was, but he's also not a great choice to be like your pick of 2022 to make a star, but he's the one who's getting probably the biggest push and the biggest growth of anyone.
Well, you can build a championship team one of two ways. In baseball, you can grow your own players, supplement them with a few free agent signings, or you could just have a bunch of big free agent signings.
Yeah.
And that's how AEW has, you know, part of the problem, some of those guys have not been elevated to the top of the card, is there's a glut at the top of the card with guys that Tony Khan paid seven figures to come
I know.
In. So he's naturally gonna push them.
Yeah. And I genuinely think Tony, we'd have a better track record of Tony building stars if A, he didn't make good decisions about signing free agents. I mean, those are good decisions to make. I don't think there's any, and they did push some people down the card or delay people being pushed. And it took prestigious pay-per-view and TV time away from wrestlers who would have grown and been featured otherwise. I think Powerhouse Hobbs is on a good course. I think Miro has a chance to recover. But I'm saying they seem to be on the right course, or I think it can happen, or it's looking good, is not the same as there's someone who wasn't a top star in WWE, and compared to 2 years ago, they are a substantially bigger star today, and they're at the top of the card. And that's what I mean by creating stars. Not valuable players on your roster, but stars. And
yeah, but how often does that even happen in wrestling, right, in the last 20 years? Roman Reigns was a flop and a flop and a flop until he was a heel. John Cena took forever, and then he was sort of he always had the kids, but, right, he got booed by the adult males. And Vince McMahon had Hulk Hogan. Vince McMahon screwed up Steve Austin, but Steve Austin overcame it. Vince McMahon screwed up The Rock when he came in, and then The Rock eventually was too good to be denied. So it's like a lot of the stars in the 80s were stars somewhere else before they went to WWE or WCW. And it's hard, right? It's just really hard to create a star who and because now there is no other place for people to go, right, for the most part, to get that kind of exposure. Challenge.
I would say what I'd like to see Tony do is pick someone, not just one, but, you know, pick a handful of people and go with them. And by handful, it might just be three besides your free agent signings. But make sure that anybody who watches Dynamite for 6 weeks knows that these three wrestlers, one woman, two men, whatever, you know, somewhere in that range, are stars. And he just, there's not that commitment and that follow through.
Because he did – look what he did. He got out of MJF's way, as you said. MJF was their top heel, one of the most entertaining performers they had, and he didn't feel like he was being paid enough, and now he's in the shadow realm. It's either a work or it's a shoot or it's a, you know, whatever it is. But good Lord, I mean, that's what happened, right? So that – yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, Greg, back to you.
Yeah, so I got two more thoughts that I'll make pretty quick here to follow up on what we discussed before. And first of all, like, I feel like a broken record saying this because it's been the theme of a lot of calls lately, but I think there needs to be a moratorium on debuting new names that we're not familiar with until you can find a place to establish the people you already have. Because now, I mean, we've got what the guy formerly known as Harland in NXT running around with a new group who I barely even saw on TV on NXT, much less being brought in as I guess you're supposed to think of him as a big deal. And I understand you're establishing people, and it worked out with the former Ever-Rise 2.0, but it's like, I mean, there's just so many people running around TV. Like, I still go back to Josh Woods, and it's like, why are we supposed to care about this guy? Why are we supposed to care about that guy? Or even that the Lucha or the tag team match tonight is like, there wasn't well-established reason for having this. And, you know, at one point I commended like Dynamite for having like promos for everybody during the show, but I feel like now, like, it's a combination of sometimes they're beneficial, but then sometimes it's just like, there's not ways to establish people. And it's, I feel like more and more saying this, that the top of the card's very solid with like Punk and Moxie. That's going to be a strong build into what I'm sure is going to be a very strong match. I don't think anybody has any doubts about that. And then I guess there's also a plan for whatever's going on with the Elite. But the rest of the show, to me, it just feels like a mess in a lot of ways. It's not boring. It's not uninteresting. It just seems chaotic. And there, it kind of seems – the show, I get the sense that it's a mess outside of the major things on the show. Sometimes that's okay. Sometimes, like, it's just it's a little too much sometimes. But I think, like, you know, just stop – debuting new people that I don't care about and or don't have a reason to know about until one thing that would be interesting going forward is that Triple H claimed that he wanted to have a 6-month vision for everybody who was called up from NXT, and of course I guess Vince kind of wasn't going along with that. But it would be interesting now if that were the case compared to the people, if that's the case going forward, compared to a lot of people who just seem to be getting thrown on TV with nothing really to establish them or to care about them too much other than going out there and trying to have good matches. And that's my last point, is that I noticed that this bracket for the six-man team tournament has the Young Bucks and Will Ospreay on the same side of the bracket. And I thought that was interesting, especially if, like, Kenny Omega was coming back to team with the Young Bucks, and you'd have a Omega and Will Ospreay potentially in the same ring for the same match along with the Young Bucks. And it's like that, that to me, just like, because we talked about this back in the buildup for the Forbidden Door show, of like, somebody who doesn't regularly follow New Japan, why are we supposed to care about these guys other than they do a lot of great wrestling moves and they have good matches that are high quality and get a lot of stars in newsletters? It's like, I feel like that this might just be another attempt ultimately to cater to the people who are already inclined to praise them just for having great matches, and that's having great matches with a bunch of moves is all you really need. And I know that that's not, it's not that simple. It's more nuanced than that, but I just see more of like this catering to a certain kind of fan without too much consideration for what doesn't fall outside, what falls outside of that particular type of fan. And I'm done with that.
Yeah,
that's my final point.
All right, Greg. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Eric, good matches are not a bad thing, but good matches won't have the impact that they could have if there aren't these other things that Greg is talking about coming into them and coming out of them, in terms of building it up to get the most anticipation out of it and have the stakes be well established and have the match tell a story that's tied to more than something that you establish halfway into a 14-minute match and then resolve at the 14-minute mark. But there's something happening before that, that you take the time through the cadence of booking in the weeks leading up to it, but also taking a minute or two beforehand or an in-set interview, as you pointed out, during ring entrances, or ideally a combination of all of that, a confluence of all of that, leading to this moment. Like, Jade Cargill and Madison Rayne should have been a moment. It should have been something that got talked about before the match happened. It should have been talked about last week more than just dropping Madison Rayne's name. Like, everybody knows who she is, and y'all can't wait, can ya? And so it does seem like sometimes a good star rating and a good match is a substitute for things that are less fun or things that come less naturally to Tony or things he just underrates. And that is where, again, he's going to get that praise and that feedback he looks for from good matches, and he deserves it, because how many promoters haven't prioritized that, especially Vince McMahon? And so it's a good thing. It's, no one's saying, let's have fewer good matches. The argument has always been, make sure you get the most out of every move, the most out of every dramatic moment in a match, and follow up on it and make sure it's part of a coherent story, it's part of a journey for the wrestlers, and it's followed up on, and it's part of a more coherent presentation of an overall product, as opposed to, as long as I can tell people next week's lineup looks like we're going to have three bangers, it's going to be great. That's a substitution for all the other things, ideally, AEW would be doing to grow more. And I think I'm restating kind of in what Greg is saying, but I also agree that's kind of the definition of AEW strengths and weaknesses. So it's not they don't deserve the praise they get, it's just that shouldn't be the point that Tony's satisfied.
Yes, the ideal would be to have 4.5-star TV matches that have a logical build up to them, right? And AEW has come a little bit of a ways down the path. In the early days of Dynamite, they would just throw stuff out there with no build at all, right?
Yep.
Nothing. And they, like, at least generally speaking, they paid lip service, right? So, like, they introduced the Trustbusters tonight. Is Parker Boudreaux, the former ROH star in quotation marks, Slim J and Ari Daivari, another cast off, not doing it for you, not doing it for me either, but it's Tony Khan's, person he's bringing in for the week, or three people he's bringing in this week.
Like, buy a couch and sit in it. Don't buy
And then he will forget about, presumably he will forget about them, or they will be AEW dark fodder. At least, you know, so they don't, it's a week-to-week show. It's a fast-paced television show. That's sort of the new thing. Like, you don't get a chance to breathe most weeks. And there isn't, the discipline just does not, 3 years in, I think we can say, the discipline has not been displayed yet to get there, right, in some of these matches. And maybe some of it's just designed as throwaway television fodder. You mentioned, Greg, that you talked about Ospreay, the prospect of Ospreay and Omega on opposite sides of the ring. I think Tony Khan, by announcing – well, maybe not. I guess he didn't announce that the Will Ospreay match was going to be next week. Because if he did, Will Ospreay is in Japan on Tuesday, August 16th. I know there's a time difference, but, you know, he's got a D-Block G1 tournament match against Juice Robinson that might be to see who advances out of the D-Block to the semifinals. So I guess he didn't – I guess they could wait another week for that. So I withdraw. I thought I was about to break news that Tony Khan gave away Ghetto's booking of the G1, but there's still room for that not to be the case if they wait another week.
Yeah. Okay, so let me read an email. This is not a pushback to what we're saying, but a counter-perspective and I think there's a difference there. He goes, Alex from Montreal says, just some unfiltered positivity tonight because I loved or at least enjoyed every single segment we saw tonight. We got great wrestling. We got interesting story progression. We got a big time surprise return. And even Jim Ross sounded inspired and excited by what he was seeing tonight. Is it just me or was this show better paced than some of AEW's efforts this year? During Excalibur's What's Coming Up rundown at the end of the show, he actually felt like he had time to breathe between match graphics. We also got three segments hyping up the main event in the body of the show. Feels like we might be on the cusp of a special pay-per-view build, maybe the best since Revolution 2020. Did you notice any differences in the way the show was paced and put together tonight when compared to Dynamites from the recent past? Have a great show, guys, and thanks for all you do. So I'll say this and throw to Eric. I think they still could have done a better job with the promotion for Jericho and Moxley. I want to give praise. We got promos from both of them, and they were good promos. And I like that JAS got together and talked about it in another segment. I would have liked a little more talk during the rest of the show. And I know it's tough because there's a high spot every 3 seconds in the tornado tag, and some of the other stuff was really short. But I would have liked a little more just a sense weaved throughout the show that this show is about Moxley Jericho. And I think there's still more to be done there coming in and out of breaks, little conversation. Maybe a wrestler brings that up that used to be done. You know, we always talk about Dusty Rhodes. We need to have a match on TV. All the wrestlers say, I can't wait to see Dusty later. You don't want to be like crazy about it. But having somebody say, I got to say, my mind's on this, but I want to see what happens with Moxley Jericho match later. Little things like that when you have a match that big, two of your biggest stars in the company with the title on the line, just give me a little more. So I think there's still room for both there.
Okay, so Moxley Jericho itself started halfway through the second hour, so 90 minutes into the show that the ring introduction started, or at least, you know, somewhere around there. I don't think having three segments in the first 90 minutes hyping the thing meant that they shortchanged. I think it was an appropriate amount of hype for the match. I'm not sure what else you would have them do other than, I guess you could interview a bunch of wrestlers. Who Mox or Jericho?
In fairness to me, I guess, I think the totality of what I'm asking for would take 20 seconds. And what I mean by that is going into when a segment ends, just Jim Ross or Shivani just saying to Jim Ross, hey guys, we still got Moxley Jericho coming up. I'm so excited by this. And, you know, do you guys have picks? Or you don't even have to do the picks thing, but like just a couple more things sprinkled in where there's this sort of like buzz that it seems like the announcers, no matter what else is going on, that's on their mind. And I think, you know, maybe 30 seconds total I'm talking about. Like, I'm really not talking about a long video segment or a whole promo or a long conversation. Just those little things sprinkled in where, like, you don't even go 5 or 10 minutes in the show without being reminded. Maybe it's just an on-screen graphic still to come and drive that home. Like, almost overdo it. You know, like, when you have a match that big. That's just what I mean. Like, this was a chance to make it feel that next level special, as opposed to, like you say, doing the right thing for a main event that you probably should do every week.
I mean, I'm going to repeat what I said earlier. I think, especially based on AEW standards, three segments in 90 minutes is, I don't know, any more than that, and feels like overkill, feels WWE to me. And I know WWE has broken a lot of people's brains because they were the only game in town for 20 years, and that thing, your brain is broken, obviously. But I'm not sure I needed that many more reminders. I think I had enough reminders and an appropriate amount of reminders.
Yeah, fair enough. I think there's room for a couple things here and there sprinkled in, but not a big point. Just a when you're doing a world title match, don't feel like you can't do any. Don't feel like there's even with those two level starts. Just make it feel like this is the biggest match that's been on Dynamite. You know, and I see. Part of it is I see WWE do it for matches that it doesn't deserve or they overdo it, and I'm more a fan of overdoing it than underdoing it by 10% or 12%. Like, not more than that. But it is it's a small critique. But back to Alex's email, that's why I think my critique of Dynamite, and I think yours too, Eric, is about not the similar thing. It's not about the things we usually have gripes with. Because there was storyline progression. There was wrestlers being featured in ways where it's apparent what their journeys are. It really, I think, came down to are there too many of the same thing going on? Too many managers? Are there too many wrestlers just appearing on TV without context or buildup? And did a lot of the segments have the refinement that you want seeing on live national television? And so that's kind of it, from a quality control standpoint, I think it's a little different than my, you know, kind of the beats that I would hit before about, you know, give me some elbow grease, give me more promos. Don't just point a camera at the ring. I think this show had a new set of areas where you can watch it. And I would think AEW officials would be open to this and aspire to always be better. And the critique of this show would be maybe too many managers, too many wrestlers you didn't build up. And not enough refinement for some of the people who you can't just point a camera at and get a Moxley or Jericho level promo out of them. That's where I talk about the El Snow example. I didn't get the sense hours of thought and effort and practice went into anything in that middle hour. And I think these are wrestlers who frankly need more practice and need a little more guidance and refinement in what they're doing. And I think that brought to me the middle of the show down in a way that it didn't need to be brought down because it had some positives that Alex listed.
Yeah. I mean, I think, the show is going to be viewed in the wrestling public at large as a success because the first 40 minutes were great and the last 30 minutes were great and CM Punk returned. So if you want to remember, you know, it's what is the rule? You need to remember one or two things.
Two and a half.
Yeah. Yep. So I remember the coffin match. I remember a great main event and I remember CM Punk returning.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah.
And I personally remember the great tornado tag. But
that was not great.
I loved that match.
Overuse that word.
Oh, I know. It was very good. Okay.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes.
I enjoyed it. Your results may vary because I think you like the New Japan let's sell for 3 minutes between every move.
Don't do your straw man stuff with me. That's not fair. This is not a fake, two sides to be debated type thing.
Who was it? One of the wrestlers in that match didn't sell a destroyer on the ring apron.
Yeah.
Like was right back like Superman. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe selling for a few seconds at least, you know, 30 seconds would be great.
Yeah. Well, there was one point in the match. They're just the I'm down and out, and then suddenly I'm on the attack. You know, it's hard for me to look past that and enjoy. I can enjoy and appreciate the athleticism, but it's not a great match. Like it's not a great match when Roosh is constantly not lifting his shoulder, and the ref has to stop his count at two. Like it ceases to be a good match when that attention to detail isn't there. It's not a great match if someone doesn't whip someone harder in the ropes and hit the ropes hard. Like those little details are part of what makes a match. Not exciting, but great. You can have an exciting match that's flawed, but to be great, you got to lift your shoulder before the ref stops counting, and you got to hit the turnbuckles hard and whip your opponents hard into the ropes, and you can't set up a move where a wrestler has to hang there waiting to be hit while you posture to the crowd and take everybody out of it because you're wondering, why didn't that guy get up? Like, that's the stuff that makes a match exciting but not great. And I'm not saying this match had all those flaws. It didn't, but it had some of them.
I mean, I will call the match enjoyable in that I enjoyed it. It's one of those matches that AEW specializes in, and it's all chorus and no verse. And sometimes you want to eat a healthy meal And sometimes you want a pixie stick. This was the pixie stick.
Fair, yes.
I mean, I don't want a pixie stick, but I imagine if you're like 10 years old, you want a pixie stick.
I don't know. I mean, pixie stick sounds kind of good. Right. All right. Let's wrap up here with one more email. This is JB from Detroit. After digesting the announcement of the brackets for the trios titles culminating at All Out, what are your thoughts? In my opinion, I think they should have announced the tournament a little bit sooner so that they would have the ability to have more matches and expand the field, because AEW has such a glutton of potential trios teams. Also, with more time, I feel like the tournament would feel a little more prestigious and would have more time for proper build and hype. As it is, it feels a bit pigeonholed as simply a vehicle to get the inaugural titles on the Bucks and Kenny or Hangman. Even if the idea is to quickly get the belts on Bucks and Kenny, I don't think they necessarily have to be the inaugural champions if it was at the expense of the timing of the initial tournament. Also, okay, this is separate, but what are your thoughts on Danhausen? Personally, I find his random tag pairings and the names hilarious, and I'm looking forward to Beardhausen's match on Friday against the Gun Club. After all, it was Danhausen who initially dubbed the Gun Club the Ass Boys. So we can cover Danhausen second. We talked a bit about the tournament earlier. I was going to read that earlier when we were talking about the tournament, but now I'm getting to it now. But Eric, I think we agree that the Trios tournament would be better if we had a little bit, you know, a few more weeks to announce the bracket, set it up, and play it out. But I, in fairness, I just, let's see what happens. I mean, I'm not confident that we'll look back and go, oh, perfect timing. They had everything figured out, and we just needed to be patient. But I think there is room for that to still be the case here.
Yeah, I think they needed at least one more week for this thing. Just, I mean, I guess you can rush all the matches at the end, right? And like maybe if I can get out of work on time and I have tickets to that Rampage the Friday before the pay-per-view, maybe there's a match or two there. Both semifinal matches. I don't know. I don't think he's going to waste it on a Rampage. But, you know, what I want after looking at these brackets, I want the left side of the bracket, Death Triangle, Will Ospreay and Aussie Open, Andrade, Dragon Lee Roosh, and the Bucks and Kenny Omega. I want a round robin between those four teams. That's
yes.
What I want out of this.
That'd be actually a heck of a variation, is like kind of do some round robin point system and just say, we're not going to pretend we got eight established teams. We're just going to give you four, and they're just going to all fight each other, and it's just going to be great television.
Those would all be great pixie stick matches. I mean, they would just be all chorus, no verse. So to me, in looking at this now and having some time to digest, I reiterate some of the points we both made earlier. A Bucks and Omega versus Dark Order with Hangman Page in their corner finals would be great from a storyline perspective. Will Ospreay and Aussie Open versus the Bucks and Omega. Will and Kenny Omega have been trading blows on Twitter for months now, weeks. So that would certainly be interesting. I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know that you bring Pac back over from jolly old England and have the Death Triangle bow out. But maybe you do. Maybe you're giving New Japan something by having their team win one match before losing in the semis. I mean, just those that storyline, and then Will and Kenny Omega teasing a future singles match. Given the short amount of time you have, that would be enough for me. I'd consider it an enjoyable tournament if I get those things, I suppose.
I don't mean to demean your enjoyment of things, but that shouldn't be the way we are analyzing whether AEW is, as this emailer points out, getting the most that they can out of it. Like, I don't think the threshold should be a binary for anybody, including me. I enjoyed it. The idea should be, I think, is are they getting anywhere near the most they can out of it based on the way that they're executing it as we imagine the way it plays out? And I still think the answer to that is there's potential for that. And inevitably, some of these matches are going to be enjoyable, but I do think there's reason to think, even if it's enjoyable, could they have spaced this out and gotten more out of it?
Yeah, I think you could have done a 12-team tournament, 16, even though they have the roster to do it. 16 teams seems a little excessive to me. But, you know, 12 you give some teams buys, right?
Like
some of the more established teams get a buy, and you have some play-in matches. You certainly could have milked it better than you did. You certainly could have had different teams with bigger stars. You've got a book, you know, you've also got to build singles matches and tag matches for All Out. I'm just reacting to what has been put on the plate in front of me and trying to make the best possible meal out of that, what they've given. Would I have preferred CM Punk and FTR in this tournament? Yeah, but there's injuries, right? I would have preferred Adam Cole, the Shock to the System guys, but from NXT, but they're not cleared to compete. So could have been better, but you know, this is where we ended up. I'm just sort of shoulder shrugging, and there's a few things I'll like. So,
yeah, I guess when you throw brackets up on the screen, and if you're Tony Khan, be cognizant of where there needs to be a little bit of effort put in to explain why a team is in that tournament. Show their picture. I mean, that'll come too, but like,
yeah, right. You've got weeks to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, if they remember to do it.
Well, I'm not positive they will. But I know, and Tony's expressed to me, the frustration that we express on the show sometimes, which is if you only knew how many, like, actual injuries and just unavailable this week's incidents that he has when he's trying to book things based on, you know, the trainer says, I need to take this week off. Well, that's the week I need to do for this. Like, that kind of thing comes up, and we don't know what's happening. And he feels some of the same pain that we do when it comes to some of this stuff. But that does not erase my, you know, critique and my suggestion, I think practical suggestions on how to, you know, get more out of what you're doing. And as callers and emails have expressed, you know, make sure if you put somebody on television, I know who they are. And if I don't, or if half the audience doesn't, slow down and figure out a way to tell that story. And then when you get Claudio and people are going apeshit crazy for him, keep that momentum going, you know, like, I snuck in a little comment about a couch, but it's like Tony Khan gets a new couch in his living room, and it feels by the next week that's in the basement. He's got a new couch. And then a week later, he sits in that for a week. It's like, oh, but there's this other sectional I want. And then that old then the two-week-old couch goes in the garage for a while. The other one moves to the basement again, and then there's this one. It's like, just pick something and use it up. And that's it. And if you get something new you're excited about, make sure we know consistently for 6 weeks this is new and you're excited about it, and we know who they are. And someone who only started watching wrestling 2 weeks ago is going to also know who they are. That's what I want more of. And I sense that, you know, with our callers and emailers, and perhaps it's a self-manifesting, you know, feedback loop because of the tone we take on the show, and we drive away people who are listening to shows who are just, you know, yay, I enjoy this, great high spots, I love this match, and whatever. So it's not in and of itself proof. But certainly we're not just saying things that other people aren't feeling. Subjectively, I will say I feel some of the critiques are objectively going to manifest in a better product and better business. If some of these things, you know, they did.
Maybe a better product. I'm not sure about the better business part. They seem to hit their peak last fall, last September, when they brought in all the talent, Danielson, Punk, Cole.
And then your guy Hangman took time off, and it ruined everything, Eric.
No, things were still going well. And then they just – actually, when Hangman came back, that's and Omega left, it was sort of when the ratings went back under a million, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like, what, 1.1 million a week for a while there last fall. And now they're back up to, you know, and I think it's a testament to Tony Khan that they, you know, didn't fall below 900,000 all that much and have been consistently above 900,000 for a while now, or maybe a month, and despite all the injuries. But, you know, they didn't get they played the biggest card they could play in CM Punk at this time.
Yeah.
And they are under that now due to injuries and whatever else. And even if you improve the product, is there a ceiling here based on what you have, right? You don't have a, you know, you do not have a Stone Cold. You don't have a Rock. You don't have a Cena. you know, to really build the promotion around. And I know those stars are few and far between, and that's an unfair comparison. But it also, when you're looking to explain why the numbers are what they are, well, you know, that's why. And so it's perfectly acceptable to draw 1 million fans a week, give or take 50,000 on either side, and get a new TV deal. I still consider AEW success. It's
Of course, sure, yeah. And a success and a thoroughly enjoyable product, even with its flaws or shortcomings.
Yeah, but I mean, I think on the Torch, especially that, you know, you talk about the next 1 million viewers, and you know, you don't talk about that as much as you.
You're right. I don't. I will say this though. I don't think that. And when I say next million, it's not like I wouldn't give them credit till they got to the 2 million mark. Like, I mean, the next million is just like build to that. And I think if there were fewer injuries and they did more to focus on stars and didn't move the new couch into the basement every 2 weeks and replace it with something new, you know, I think they'd be in a better spot. I think they'd gain momentum. I think they'd keep viewers. I think there's an alienating undertone. I don't know if undertone's the right word. I think sometimes people watch and I hear from them and they feel like, well, this feels like I'm late to a party and I'm not sure I'll ever feel welcome here. And you've got your 120,000 people buying the Forbidden Door and they're being super served and thoroughly served. But I do think there's a lot of people out there who have sampled the product and are just like, I don't think they're aiming for me. And I think you can get those people without losing a single person who ordered Forbidden Door. I absolutely believe that. I do not believe in this, if you gain these two fans by doing something, you're going to displace two fans because they're going to hate what you just did. I think everything makes the product better for every current fan and every fan that I think they can gain. And I mean that actually thoroughly. I don't think any suggestion I make is with the idea being, well, you'll lose two fans but gain four. Like, I don't even think you'll lose anybody. With the things that I'm suggesting, because I never talk about subtracting good stuff. I talk about making the good stuff mean more. By the way,
go ahead.
Okay. The Bucks. What do you think about the Bucks today and their characters? Because we talk about the six man, you know, and we kind of joked about, you know, oh, they got, you know, turned away by Hangman and Kenny coming back. But as in terms of like stars in the company and building stars, initially this was going to be Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks, and Jericho and Moxley. Those are kind of the big stars. And then you have the Pillars, which is exciting. They're making their own people. But how important are the Bucks? And was today's segment a step in the right direction to give us kind of more to chew on when it comes to like who they are and what they're doing? Or does it feel kind of herky-jerky? Like, well, who are they? You know, like, are we to believe them that Matt really is feeling bad? And is it going to work and get them into a better place? Just kind of what's your assessment of the today specifically and kind of the arc that the Bucks seem to be on right now?
Well, today specifically, I was super excited. And then I felt like the air had been pulled out of the balloon. In fact, I worried about the crowd in Minneapolis. Like, okay, it seemed like the oxygen went out of the room when Andrade and Rush, the heels prevailed, and then everybody thought they were going to see the Bucks Page reunion, and then that didn't happen, and I thought, oh man, this crowd's going to die, but they didn't. They were still great throughout the rest of the show. I feel like the Young Bucks are viewed as big stars because of how they perform in ring. Has their out of ring lived up to what you might have hoped for, reached its full potential? Yeah, I think anyone would have a hard time saying that. You know, they've had their two tag team title runs. They've been faces, and then they've been heels. I'm looking forward to what's coming with Kenny and Paige and seeing how that story develops. And, you know, I imagine the upcoming feud, the three-on-three feud with Adam Cole and his tag team partners, you know, has great potential to be fun. I think given who's involved and how much creative freedom they'll have and the results we've seen so far with Adam Cole beyond his ring entrance and catchphrase, it could get a little self-indulgent. if Kenny's allowed to just do his goofy comedy, it could really go off the rails. hopefully they're all up for it. There's a huge, tremendous amount of upside to have it letting those guys loose, and you know, as you know, maybe even under your whatever, beneath whatever your top singles feud is for the fall. Your thoughts? I know I'm probably higher on the Bucks overall than you are, but I think the Bucks have improved since the sort of gulf when they looked disinterested. When would that have been? Fall of 2020, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it felt like Nick especially was going through stuff, and actually he was. But yeah, so my thing with the Bucks is I want them – for like the next 4 months to be on TV every week. And I want it to, I want the show to be like 15% about them every week, not 20% 1 week and then nothing for 2 weeks. And then 5%, cause there's a little quick backstage hit. Like, tell me a Bucks story, have confidence in it. Like just go with them. Like their matches are so good. Nick's charisma is off the charts. Matt's a distinct personality who, on a small kind of cult level relative to AEW, is this intense, has, you know, fosters this intense loyalty. And I even Matt was talking about my favorite days were before we made money, Hangman. It felt like a shoot interview. Like, I liked my job when I made a lot less money and fewer people knew who I was. And I feel like the Bucks aren't leaning into what brought them to where they are and just going with it and amplifying it. And they're still in search of who they are as national TV stars. And it feels like everything is sort of tentative or temporary. I just go all in. This is the time to do it, especially if Kenny comes back. You've got Hangman in the mix. Just make the show about the Bucks more, especially if you don't think you have anybody else who's just breaking out. You've got the, you know, MJF's been subtracted, you know, like it's part of my theme of just wanting AEW to pick, you know, 5, 6, 7 acts and just make a few months about them, even at the expense of others. And I've advocated for Cesaro being in that mix, for instance.
I mean, if I'm recalling correctly, I don't even think the Bucks were supposed to get their latest brief tag title run. I think it was supposed to go to the Hardys. Remember hearing that reported somewhere. I think they've been on hold since Kenny has been out, right? I mean, kind of. They've had great matches. And I still do watch BTE every week, maybe not like right at noon like I used to, but I'll get to it eventually on Monday. And it's nowhere near the show it was that, you know, built – that led to the creation of AEW, really, by them getting over on YouTube. But a lot of weeks, the Bucks are complaining about 13-hour travel days and
yes. have
switched planes.
Yes.
Because, and I think recently it was, oh, what do we have to do tonight? Oh, it's just a pre-tape? Okay, right? I mean, like, they've sort of made reference to that. And I want – the big picture here is, since you brought up how the promotion started, I really – do want the details. I don't know that we'll ever get them. Maybe if the Bucks write a sequel book when they're retired. Cody, the Bucks, and Kenny all thought they were coming in to run this promotion, yeah. is the sense I get. And after that Dark Order botched angle at the end of 2019 where they had the Dark Order take out the Elite and it looked really bad, and there was the video of the guy throwing the bad punches from the Dark Order. Tony Khan took, you know, is makes no bones that he took the reins at that point, and it's his promotion. It's all him and the greater glory of Tony Khan. And I wonder if they're all not just – they were all, like, really thrown for a loop by that. Clearly Cody was.
Yeah.
Kenny is a little – I'm not going to use the W word. He's unorthodox, right? He's not – he doesn't see – the color of the sky in his world is not the same as it is with everybody else's.
Yeah.
And the Bucks maybe just – you know,
checked out a little.
Yeah, we're not booking the tag division anymore. Okay, well, we'll be over here putting on our 5-star matches if you need us. Whenever called upon. And they've almost never disappointed the Bucks. So they've gotten over more because of their, you know, in-ring greatness than necessarily how they got over on BTE, which is just through, you know, personality and that kind of thing. But
it still amazes me how little attention or has been paid to being the Elite as a thing. Like, the Dynamite audience is, it's like Tony just doesn't like it, like, or is embarrassed by it, or I don't even, or feels threatened by it. I don't even know. I like pick seven other possibilities, but they've never like said, hey, don't forget. I mean, well, I should say never. I think once I recall them saying, hey, Being the Elite, it's on YouTube. Like, how is that? Like, their theme song is Be the Elite. How do you not talk about what built the brand of the Bucks and built the brand where the name Elite comes from? And it just, it's like just Tony moved on from that, like, almost instantly. And it does come down to, like, yeah, but if the Bucks and Cody especially thought, you know, this is going to be our vision, and it, after a couple months, Tony's like, nope, you know, this is my thing. I'm doing it my way. Yeah, I mean, and I would love for a tell-all book, you know, to get their perspective on it. Not a bitter one. Well, maybe it'd be bitter, but just, you know, their perspective on how things went, and if they feel like, you know, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash both told me, you know, when Eric Bischoff fired Sean Waltman to get back at them, they stopped caring. They stopped doing anything but what they were contractually obligated to do. And they were doing more. They wanted to help Bischoff, even if, you know, they didn't want to upset Vince because they always thought they might go back there. They wanted to win. They wanted to earn Vince's respect and succeed. But Eric did something that caused them to flip a switch that went from showing up excited to do a little extra and help the company to leaning back and going, oh, I'm sorry, that's not in my contract, because Eric made a bad call and it blew up in his face. So it can happen. You know, I'm not saying the Bucks are sandbagging or sabotaging the company, but you can sort of check out at some point going, I was really excited, and human nature is such, based on what happened, now I'm not. And it you throw that in the pandemic and the death of John Huber and, you know, some you know, health and injury stuff and the fatigue of the travel that they never had to deal with, and how much less fun it is dealing with airports than it is being in a car with your buddies and driving around and working a lighter schedule. You know, this hasn't seemed like it's been their favorite thing. And it kind of came across in that sentimental speech that Matt gave Hangman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I picked up on that because I was so chomping at the bit to for the reunion, and they just like they didn't have the Hangman match at All Out last year. They saved it for Full Gear. They didn't give it to you this time, right? And that's, I would assume, yeah, where the storyline is ultimately headed. Like, I assume at some point before the end of the year, Adam Cole adds somebody else to their trio, and they're beating down Kenny and the Bucks, and Hangman comes out to make the save, and then there's the big Elite reunion, and probably I'll need some Kleenex because I might have tears going down my eyes, tears of happiness.
Going back to what Matt said, Matt said the favorite time of his life, he's telling Hangman this, is when they were together running and gunning and building a revolution that ended up being called All Elite Wrestling. By definition, he's saying before All
right.
Elite Wrestling.
Yeah.
The thing we did that built up what eventually became that was my favorite time. I genuinely believe that's a genuine comment, and that he's feeling sentimental about the journey until they became multimillionaires who had to travel on these long flights, and their characters are now based around complaining about being tired and not wanting to travel and being injured. And you add to it, not feeling like they have creative input, and that this is going to be that AW has become their legacy. It's just having a good match now and then is what this is now. And I'm sure the bumps in the matches are catching up to them physically too. And, you know, the clock is ticking, and, you know, sometimes if somebody gets $2-3 million in the bank, you know, that's enough to just, and they got more than that probably, I mean, after taxes and stuff. Sometimes it's like, oh God, that's enough for me to be happy. I don't know if I want to go through all this other stuff. And some people react differently to that.
Yeah, there was a lot less pressure on them when they were in New Japan for a bunch of tours a year, mostly in the junior tag division and, you know,
yeah,
you know, a supporting cast member of Bullet Club. And then they eventually were, you know, in the heavyweight tag team division. But, yeah, it looks a lot different. You know, you're doing it for fun, right? They're yeah, doing it because they loved it, and now they're doing it for a truckload of money. So
yeah,
it does change your perspective.
Yeah. All right, someone's not getting an email. By the way, before I read that, are you watching WWE more with Paul Levesque?
I have watched it more. I watch every pay-per-view. I mean, it's not like I don't read the recaps. I listen to podcasts. I know what's going on. I just, 3 hours of Raw on a Monday, I can't ever commit 3 hours of my life to a substandard TV show. Now, when he fixes it, I probably will, right? He fixes it, if.
Yeah. So anyway, James in Clemson just said, I want to make a quick point. The most annoying go-away heat wrestler in AEW is Athena. On the flip side, I love everything Anna Jay is doing lately. So,
The first part, there's a lot of annoying wrestlers in AEW. Anna Jay seems her new gimmick. I am not buying it for even a half second. I think I tweeted something like that. This gimmick isn't working. And Zach Haydorn quote tweeted it and agreed and had even better analysis. So go to Zach's Twitter feed if you want to see his thoughts on that. It doesn't seem natural. It seems like a put on. Maybe she'll grow into it. Maybe not. Maybe if she had a mixed martial arts background, I could buy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's almost WWE-like in that she sees a random person out of the view of the camera and then chokes them out for no good reason. I don't know. Maybe it's not her fault. Maybe it's just lame conceptual thing.
Yeah. I'm not with him on Athena. I remember
Sanjay Dutt is 50 times more annoying to me than Athena, but
yeah, the thing with the difference is, and this is a great note to potentially end on Eric, is Sanjay Dutt's goal is to be annoying, but he's being annoying in a way that doesn't really belong on TV necessarily. Like it, you know what I mean? Like, but his his goal is to be annoying. Athena, I think, is trying to be endearing. There's just a kind of a self-satisfied, an unawareness to how sort of self-satisfied she is in thinking what she's doing is likable, and it's not. And I think that's worse than trying to be annoying and succeeding, but in a different way, versus being sort of off-putting and having no clue because you're trying to actually be appealing.
I mean, so I come from a newspaper background, and when a story or a piece goes off the rails and gets published anyway, many people blame the reporter, the person who reported and wrote the piece.
Yeah.
As an editor for most of my time, or the back half of my time, I'm like, well, who edited it, right? The editor's supposed to be the adult. The editor's supposed to be the gatekeeper, the person with good judgment.
Yeah.
Why are they allowing this to happen? And my guess is, you know, you touched on this earlier, probably there's not a whole lot of editing going on with the women's division. You laid out what is probably almost the true scenario. It gets plopped in and it doesn't get any attention from Tony Khan, and QT puts it on the page and for segment 7 every week, and that's about it.
Yeah. And I think it's not just the women. It's a good part of the mid card we see on TV too. But unfortunately, the women are the mid card. You know, a greater percentage of the women's division is mid card than the men, and so it feels like it's Tony's disinterest in paying attention to the women's division. I would say it's Tony's disinterest in paying attention, the attention that's needed to, you know, the bottom 70% of what he puts on national television. It just so happens a lot of that's the women.
I'm surprised we made it the entire show, more than 2 hours, and nobody brought up Sammy Guevara tossing the baseball bat into the way over the ring in the main event. And then I think Aubrey ended up looking as Chris Jericho retrieved the bat and pummeled him with Moxley with it. Unintentionally, that was the funniest part of the whole show tonight for me. Funnier than Athena's goofy faces and Sanjay's annoyingness.
I will say one botch in the – I don't botch is the right word in the final minutes of the show is Punk's music was a little late because Jericho had to wind up with that title belt as Moxley was being held. And it's like, why is Jericho not hitting him? Why is Jericho waiting? Oh, that's why. Cause Punk's music is supposed to start. And you know what? That's part of the refinement. You got to hit the cue. You got to hit that music at the right time. And my hunch is Jericho's pissed about that. Cause Jericho knows he was standing out there and just looking bad, not making the move that he would be making for no good reason. And it took away from the Punk pop that it was like, oh, Punk's coming out. That's why Jericho wasn't hitting him with the belt. And that wouldn't have been a thought on anyone's mind had the music queued up a second and a half sooner.
Right, and that's not on Punk who was limping out to the ring. That's on the music person, right?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
Their cue.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. However that is set up, whether it's Tony saying play the music and he just was late, or the director or whoever. But yeah, like that's you know. It, again, doesn't mean the show wasn't enjoyable, or that it wasn't good. But those are things they can get better at, and I think that's the kind of thing you know. Brian James Road Dogg was saying on Twitter when he watches Dynamite, he's like, "There's so many things that you know we need to clean up about this." And you know, I watch it through that lens, and know, and from talking to WWE people too, when they watch it, they're like, "Oh man." If they only did this, and this, you know, they'd be in a better spot. And that was one of those little things, too. And it happens too often in AEW, you know, the botched gimmick match finishes and that kind of thing, too. But, you know, they're still – it's weird, but they're still new at this, too. It's not easy doing a two-hour live show every single week with the pressures that they have.
That sounds awful lot like – you know how hard it is to write 5 hours of TV a week?
Yeah. 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 Eric, thank you so much. Anything you want to plug or mention or say?
Well, in theory, I sent in a piece about AEW that may make it through the Torch sausage grinding editing process this week, possibly. So look at that
for people. Yes.
Yeah.
And we'll see what the editor. You've given me a pep talk about the role of the editor, so I got to process that.
Everyone needs an editor. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Eric. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thanks to our listeners. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.